It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Of course, we got all the news about the new Galaxy foldable phone. Actually, I think it might be pretty cool. Google has a big announcement coming up March 19th. It's all about gaming. And what was Google up to when they attempted to block ad blockers? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 496, recorded Wednesday, February 20th, 2019. Jeff gives it a pass. This Week in Google is brought to you by Aftershocks, unbelievably comfortable open-ear headphones. Hear music and crystal-clear phone calls like never before. Visit twig.aftershocks.com and use a code TWIG for $50 off the tech bundle. And by Oura Ring, the most accurate sleep and activity tracker. Visit AuraRing.com and use the code TWIT for $50 off your purchase. And by DigitalOcean, the simplest cloud platform for developers and teams. Deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/TWIT. It's time for Twig. Yes, the Piper has signaled the beginning of the show, and it's time to talk about Google, the Googleverse, Facebook, Twitter, journalism, the Samsung. Internet of Things, Samsung. That's Jeff Jarvis. We know him better.
I'm going to have one question we're going to get to in a few minutes, but are you going to buy one?
Already did. Too late.
You already did.
He's the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
Also blogs at BuzzMachine.com. He's at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. Stacey Higginbotham is at GigaStacey on the Twitter. She's at Stacey on IoT. She's our sailor-suited IoT expert.
I was just thinking that.
Okay. No, it's a black and white striped shirt. It's not navy, and the stripes aren't white enough, and I don't have a boat neck. Thank you.
Take that. And she's landlocked.
You fashion fools. Well, Karl Lagerfeld is no longer with us, so somebody has to take his mantle, and I think it's going to be Stacey Chanel. I'm going to call you Coco.
The Kamala Harris jacket?
No, I didn't know anything about the Kamala Harris jacket.
Oh, there was a kerfuffle because reporters, when she was going to visit small businesses, she went in this place and it had this amazing multicolored jacket, and she tried it on. The reporters were laughing, and she's saying, "Don't take pictures." And then the right wing went crazy about the reporters are just cozying up, and
CNN,
they shot for Bush too.
Tyler Durden, which clearly is a pseudonym, CNN reporter sparks ethics controversy after Kamala Harris fashion shoot. It's been shared eight times on the internet. Thank you, YouTube. YouTube always promotes the best content. Oh,
but I want to hear the review of the jacket. I want to hear
the
jacket.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen the jacket.
Is it like Joseph's amazing color green coat?
I think it's... Well, I want to see what I think.
Let me see if I can find an image.
Well, I will say, having read... Because when House of Cards was happening, I was all about Robin Wright's clothes. They were gorgeous and fantastic. Yeah. And I was like, man... Who are they using in this show? Because I want these clothes. And it turns out she made most of them because many, they don't think about how to dress a president. And I was like, oh, dang it. She should have her own line.
The issue here is that Maeve Reston, who is a CNN reporter, tweeted, "We kind of forced," oops, I closed it. Dang it. How does this internet work?
Can you use this internet log?
I'm turning into my father. How does this internet thing work? Take two. Oh, Kamala Harris jacket. So Maeve Reston, is she related to Reston Sr.?
I have no idea.
The very famous, what is his name, James Reston? So here's the tweet. "We kind of forced Kamala Harris to try on this awesome oversized rainbow sequin jacket. She snapped it up. She bought
that
it."
That is awesome.
What's wrong with
that?
Is
that awesome? Great.
And then,
I mean, I wouldn't wear it, but it is awesome.
Well, it's awesome, whatever. It's her style. That's fine. Then Neil Bortz, the conservative talk radio host, says, "Quite the objective journalist you are, Reston. Proud." And then, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, I know.
So I have to say CNN is under a little bit of a fire these days because of something
else. I was going berserk last night.
I bet you were. Is this in our purview? Is this in our portfolio? No,
I don't think it is.
Let's talk about foldable phones. I mean, I don't really want. So here's what's. Well, yeah. Let's just talk about foldable.
Samsung had their big event. We just concluded our coverage of it. You can watch the whole thing on the Samsung stream or on our stream. And they announced.
Which, by the way, I thought this was going to be super fast and we were going to be early today, but there was so much stuff.
There was a lot. In fact, they really skimmed the surface because there was a lot of things they didn't talk. Did you hear Bixby mentioned? Did you hear their new Android interface, the Samsung One interface? Barely mentioned. They whipped through it. They didn't talk a lot about features on the watches. They whipped through it. And what's interesting to me, quite the opposite of Apple. Apple usually will build to the end, and then the one more thing, the reveal, that was always the traditional way of doing it. But they usually saved the most important piece for the end of the show. Samsung started at the beginning with the most important piece easily, the Galaxy Fold, which will be available April 26th. It is, yes, a folding phone, a front screen, little small 4-inch front screen that opens up to a 7-inch screen. And there's a handoff so that whatever you're looking at the front screen, if it's a map, as they demonstrated, you'll open up and the map will be full screen on the 7-inch screen. I thought it looked great.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was going to make fun of it. I was all ready to, and then I got a little bit of lust.
Then, of course, they announced the price, $1,980, and people choked. But I think Samsung secretly went, yeah, choke, because if you think about it, they already said it's a luxury device.
Oh, yeah.
People will buy it. It's such a distinctive phone. They want everybody to know it's $2,000 because if you have that phone, it's a status item, right? If you open it up, everybody knows you spent $2,000.
Plus, it costs a lot to make.
Yeah, and I don't think $2,000 is actually that far out of the park, especially if it's a replacement for your computer. And that's what phones are becoming rapidly, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't. Really?
No, well, I mean, I know a lot of people looking at it saying, I want it, and it's out of my reach because it's so expensive.
Dude, I mean, like, in a normal house where you have a computer at your job, people still mostly have computers unless they're in, like, a weird field, maybe design or something. Every home still has a computer unless you're, I know every
No, millennials may not, though, remember?
No, because if you still have to write something or do anything, you have to do it on a computer. I am asking. I'm thinking this through. I'm like,
I think you might be. That might be old. A generational gulf.
I might be
old, Stacey. Yeah.
I wasn't going
to
say.
My daughter spends a lot of time on her computer. I mean, I'm willing for that to change, but
she's a student. She's a student. But once you're not a student, you're not writing papers. You're not doing homework. I think. I mean, it's already the case that we all. And I bet you're included in this, spend mm-hmm. much more time on the mobile version of our computers than mm-hmm. on the desktop versions. Maybe not because you're a writer.
Right. But I do see your, I'm just, wow.
Welcome to the new world.
No, I'm just thinking about paying bills or like buying stuff. I mean, yes, I buy stuff on my phone too, but like, I don't know.
Demonstrated a 3-pane interface. So you have tiled windows. And it looked pretty easy to swap the windows around.
A keyboard, if you want.
I'm sure there's a keyboard available. Yeah.
I mean, I cleaned up my office. Doesn't it look good? And it looks better.
It looks completely different.
It does. I was laughing because I'm like, what'd you find, Jeff?
So I found my. I think it was Trio owned by Palm.
Yeah.
A
while.
Yes.
So I found my Trio.
Well, they weren't owned by Palm, but they did the Palm OS.
Well, I think it was my Trio. I can't even tell. But the point is having the keyboard on it. I thought how addicted we were and how keyboards
it's Palm.
Become less and less and less important. And also in a less text-based world. I mean, paying bills, Stacey, that's point and click. It's writing stuff. Sorry.
well, you might. It just depends what you write.
Yeah.
So I thought even really interesting on this, and this isn't the folding phone. They show this on the S10. Was it's essentially an Instagram dedicated Instagram device. In fact, they had the CEO of Instagram, longtime Facebooker, Mosseri come up on stage, and they showed how quick it was to share directly to Instagram without even opening the app. And of course, Samsung took some heat, has taken some heat in years past because you can't uninstall the Facebook app. Now, I'm sure will be unable to uninstall the Instagram app. And that's very interesting. That's an interesting play. So Samsung is looking at how people use phones. Remember, as a South Korean company, they may have culturally a different point of view. In Japan,
everybody laughed when the phablet came out.
Right.
Everybody said, oh, those weird Koreans, only they will use it in the world. Nobody's going to want a big phone.
That's the best analogy. And in fact, I bought the first Note, fell in love with it, have owned every Note since. People laughed at me. I put the Note to my head.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, I think
I
did.
They'd say, what's that, that piece of lumber you're holding up? But I loved it. And so I do think this is going to be. I poo-pooed folding phones right up until this demo.
Yeah.
I thought folding phones were awesome. I was waiting for this, and I'm like, you guys were all like, and I'm like, let's see. But
you were right.
I'm still stuck on this idea of computing. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about like, oh, how do you book travel? How do you,
maybe you're right that the only reason I brought that up is because $2,000 is that's the price of a laptop.
Well, yes. I'm like, you know what we need? We need another generation on this show. We need a millennial. Well, not even. Where's young millennial.
Yeah, I bet you Henry, he'd be happy with this. Although
Did Henry watch? Was he around?
He did watch, I think. He is around.
I'm curious what his review is.
He does use a MacBook for video editing. And of course, he works in sales, so he's doing a lot of stuff with spreadsheets and presentations.
Well, and I watch a bunch of kids like in college and that sort of thing. They use MacBooks or laptops as their video consumption device.
Absolutely. But wasn't it the case that in Japan, personal computer ownership was much lower than in the West, and they had, as a result, much smarter phones earlier?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the case in Korea, South Korea.
Japan and Korea, well, Korea has a wonderful mobile infrastructure and carriers that are very innovative. So unlike ours that are nickel and dime us for everything, Korea's have been... South Korea.
Well, that's another point, because they spent a lot of time at the end of the show talking about 5G. They're going to have two 5G ready phones available soon. You can pre-order the 5G Galaxy 10 in a month. No, not even
this
a month.
This was 5G. This where is 5G really installed?
Well, it isn't really. That's my first thing as well. Who cares? Nobody can get it. And then I realized, wait a minute, that's a very parochial point of view, because of course 5G is widespread in South Korea.
It is. Okay.
5G. Is it?
I think so.
I didn't know if it was yet.
Furthermore,
I don't know if it's that widespread. I mean,
more widespread than here, which is
zero.
Yeah, we don't have any 5G.
One estimate is by 2023, an entire 32% of the U.S. population will have access to 5G, but in 2 years, one third.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So, as of December, South Korea launches 5G, but only for enterprise users initially. But they're anticipating.
Furthermore, pardon me?
Because didn't Qualcomm just launch their 5G mobile chip
I suspect that's the chip. Yeah, I suspect that might be the chip they're waiting on.
Right? I mean, that just happened this week.
Right. Furthermore, what Chinese giant makes 5G gear that is currently being spanked all around the world?
Oh.
Huawei. And I thought, well, gee, this almost sounds like Samsung might make 5G networking gear for carriers. They do.
So it's a competitive opportunity to grab some market share.
Oh, so 5G mobile routers and 5G, let's see. The SK, South Korea telecom provider, offers 5G. There's actually two service providers. They both have Spectrum. I guess it's coming soon. Sooner there than here. I'm not clear outside of
industry. Okay, and you got to figure out if it's mobile 5G or if it's just them using 5G like Verizon.
They plan to provide enterprise customers with 5G in Busan, Incheon, Daegu, Daejeon.
That's fixed.
That's enterprise. Guangzhou, and Ulsan.
Yeah, that's fixed mobile or fixed wireless.
Yeah, but you're right. And in fact, we have fixed wireless, not the same standard, but we have fixed wireless in the U.S. as well in enterprise.
Right. Well, we have fixed wireless 5G. That's what Verizon's offering people right now.
That's right. But it's their 5G. It's not our.
It's not the 3GPP standard right. that is used by cellular carriers.
Oh, I love it when you guys geek out.
It's not geek. It's just accuracy.
Yes.
Sorry. That was like the nerdiest thing I think I've ever said.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm not being accurate. Excuse me.
I'm going to be pedantic for a moment.
Excuse me. This is not pedantry. This is accuracy. So I think that this is a very interesting. Remember that the immediate competitors to Huawei
yourself, Stacey,
are Nokia and Ericsson. But that sounds to me, it sounded to me like a kind of a play by Samsung. You know, you like South Korea. We're an ally. Just saying. So that's interesting. They also announced three new Galaxy S10 phones. We knew everything there was. Well, I thought was really interesting too. This is from a point of view of technology journalism, is that everything about the S10 phone had been completely leaked accurately in detail, including yesterday a Norwegian television station that accidentally ran the ad for it a day early. So we even had an ad for it. But we knew nothing about the Galaxy Fold. It was a complete revelation. We knew they were doing it. That's all. Because they had said so. So my guess is that means Samsung has the ability to keep the lid on some things and the desire to leak other things.
Well, especially if they have like so much stuff. Yeah.
I mean, keep our this. What is it? It's not a red herring. Is it a red herring? Because no, they're real. But it's like a pipe releasing a valve. Yeah. That's it. So they're releasing stuff to the media because the media is definitely looking.
Right.
And then you keep your good stuff secret.
And also they keep the eye of the reader on them for an entire two-week period leading up to the event. I think at this point they're going to have set a bar that's very high for every other carrier or phone manufacturer at Mobile World Congress this weekend. This was cleverly timed. They did it in San Francisco, not Barcelona. They did it a few days early. I think Samsung has shown a mastery of the media over the last 2 weeks. That's quite impressive.
Yes.
But not great taste in music.
You can't have everything.
So one of the things that they didn't talk about much, you said, that I'm very curious about is the One interface.
And all I know is what I read. Mm-hmm. But Dieter Bohn in The Verge has been playing with it, apparently, and he wrote a very positive review about it yesterday.
The best thing ever.
He said it's the best Android interface yet, better than Google's.
Hmm.
He really liked it. So that's encouraging, too, because if there was one negative, the one reason I don't carry a Samsung phone. Yeah, I use the Google phone. Well, there's two reasons. One is the user interface. It's purer on a Google phone, although Bohn points out, really, what is pure Android? AOSP maybe is pure Android, but that doesn't have any of the Google stuff at all on it. So really what Google's selling is their skin.
More pedantry out of you guys. Jeez.
That's pretty pedantic. I think of the Google version as pure Android.
Yes, it is.
But Samsung's has gotten closer and closer, not to pure Android, but to equally good Android.
Do they still have, do they still stick a lot of bloatware on their device?
No.
Okay, because that's always been the issue with Samsung.
That was the problem, yeah.
Well, but there is going to be that issue, which is you're going to have Samsung's gallery and Google Photos. You're going to have Samsung's browser and Chrome. And Bohn acknowledged this, that there are still double applications in many areas. So if you call
that... As long as I can still use my Google thing, because I don't want to switch
Samsung's
photo thing. So.
And now we know Instagram will be on there. Facebook has always been on there. So if that's what you're talking about, I don't think that's changed.
Yeah.
But I don't.
It just gets kind of frustrating.
It is.
But you could remap the Bixby button now. Woo!
Can you?
That's Ooh. What it, there was just an article saying that I think it's on The Verge, that you can remap
that's huge.
The Bixby.
Because yeah. you could see, that may be an error again. They had the same story when the S9 came out, and then once the S9 came out, it was modified so that you could not.
Here's The Verge. You can remap the Bixby button on Samsung's Galaxy S10 to do whatever you want.
Is that
as of today?
It's
12 minutes ago.
If it's according to Samsung. Yeah, they were in the hands-on room, I'm sure. So if it's according to Samsung,
yeah, The Verge has confirmed that with the S10, the company has added settings that allow you to customize the button beyond what's been allowed previously.
I'm starting to really be bullish on all of this. And so there's actually three. I'm going to make three things, three reasons I haven't used a Samsung phone. That's one, the skin, and I guess you can include the junkware. Two, Google Fi. It's not a Fi phone. I'm going to have to use it with a U.S. carrier. And three, security patches.
Security.
One of the issues has always been that security patches, especially those monthly updates, I don't mind that that Samsung's been slow to put 9 on its phones, and they have, because that's features. But I think security is super important, and they have also been a month or so behind on the security patches. That probably stay the same, even with Treble. So those, for some people, may still be compelling reasons to stick with the Pixel. Pixel's, as we talked about last week, doing very well.
And now it looks cheap.
And it does look cheap. It does. This, the Samsung S10e is $750. The S10 is $899 at its base model. The base model of the S10 Plus is $999. But the one I ended up getting with a ceramic back and 512 gigs of storage was a whopping $1,250.
How much did you spend today?
Just that, because I couldn't get the Fold yet.
You can't buy the
Fold. I'll buy the Fold. We have to. We review them. It's not, I'm not, I wouldn't, if I were not doing what I do, if I were just a civilian, so to speak, I don't think I would buy either.
Well,
I'm very happy.
You wouldn't buy the Fold.
If you were a civilian with a budget, you don't, but likes gadgets. I mean, this is not a phone that probably will appeal to the mainstream until some super cool people have it. So,
Leo.
Yeah.
No, I think I love the Pixel. And especially with the price cuts now, you can get Pixels a lot less expensive. I mean, they're cutting $300 or $400 off the Pixel prices now at various, you know, deals. I think the Pixel is probably what I'd have. And if I were really price sensitive, I'd probably have a Moto G7 or G6. G7's coming.
Here's the other one with the folding one. That's thick.
Oh,
right?
Well, so the Royal... which is the only other folding device currently on the market. It was shown at CES, is $1,500, and it's janky as hell. So the FlexPi, I'll show you if you want to see it. The FlexPi, compare this at $1,500 to what Samsung's doing with a much more, I think, elegant UI. And I think, you know, this is definitely Samsung's got a beat. And yeah, it's expensive to make this. Samsung, by the way, is putting a lot of cameras in, 3 cameras in the S10. The folding phone will have 6 cameras, 2 in the front, 3 in the middle, 1 in the back.
It is hard. If you've got a folding phone, you got to figure out which way someone's going to point the open,
well,
close.
And by the way, a lot of the pictures, even on stage today at the Samsung event, people had their fingers right over that punch out for the camera because that's just the natural way to hold it.
So. You know what would be interesting? Okay, so you've got 6 cameras now. You know, my beloved Jabra 65T Elite headphones, they have 2 mics on each side, and I'll get to it. They actually take a sample from each mic and they optimize. They pick whichever one sounds better on phone calls to pick up your voice. So it's like whichever of the 4 mics that you've got available, it's like, oh, this one.
You know,
and it's a very quick AI thing. But imagine that with your fingers in front of a camera on your phone.
Use the right camera.
Right.
It's a funny thing you should say that. Because Samsung also announced the Galaxy Buds. I guess Google neglected to trademark Buds. And it does the same thing. It figures out which microphone sounds better and uses that.
Yeah, that's NXP's technology. They announced it 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Pretty cool.
So they're probably using NXP's chips?
That's what I would... I don't know that for certain, but that's what I would guess.
The other thing that's cool about these Galaxy Buds, they have a very much like the AirPods. They have, you know, little in-ear buds that go in a case that charges them, just like your Jabras. But the case is a wireless charging case and can charge on the back of the phone.
Okay, so I have mixed feelings about this. I'm excited, like, woo! But then I'm also like... That's good when I have access, but what happens like when I don't want to use my precious, precious phone battery to charge my device.
At least it would be you. My real fear is they're going to be phone nudges that are going to borrow your phone's battery. They're going to say, oh, hi. Do you mind if I put my watch on your phone?
You mind if I put my phone on your phone?
One of the most successful posts I ever wrote as a journalist from a page view perspective was at GigaOM, and it was like, sorry, that's my MiFi. Like,
yeah, my own. Get off my MiFi.
And it was because it was very early on, and people kept, like, if the device was out, people would be like, oh, can I connect? And
I'd be like, wait a second. Yes. No, you can't.
Maybe.
Can I borrow a little power?
Yeah, so,
okay. Well, until I started earning karma, they used the karma MiFi, and then if other people used yours, you earned future usage.
Yeah. You still using that?
No.
No.
No, who's got a MiFi nowadays? They even changed their name. Come on. I think that's happening soon.
Well, because I have my AT&T grandfathered thing, and I'm just stubborn. And I think it's going to hurt AT&T. I think every day they wake up and say, Jarvis!
No, they're all excited.
Get off that grandfather.
They're all excited because you're the last one.
I know.
They've talked everybody out of it. Incidentally, that PowerShare technology Samsung showed is not exclusive to them. Somebody in the chat room's pointing out that the Mate, the new Mate phone, Mate 20 from Huawei, does that. And the rumor is Apple's new phones will have PowerShare technology as well.
I guess if you have one charging pad and you put your phone on, that allows you to charge two things. Exactly. That's all, right?
So it's, that's cool.
Yeah,
but you could just also be on the train. You could be sitting on the path, and somebody could say, "Oh, my Galaxy Buds just died. Can I just put them on the back of your phone for a little bit?"
No, because I'm using it.
this is the quiet car, Jeff. You can't use it. Just put it.
I'm reading.
You could be consuming content on your nifty foldable phone.
Okay. Anyway, I think this was a very good day for Samsung. I think are they using
Qi charging?
They didn't use the Qi word, the QI word. But their chargers are Qi chargers, the Samsung chargers, because I charge my iPhone on it. They have those fast chargers. So I'm going to presume this is all Qi.
So then you could probably take your earbuds and put them on a Qi charger, like if you have it built into your nightstand, and then just like plop those down, and you'd be like,
would that not work?
Built into your nightstand?
The stack.
I do not, but my next nightstand will have it
built in. Oh, uh-huh. Doesn't IKEA have it? Have that?
Yeah, IKEA sells them.
Mm-hmm. IKEA offers them. Actually, a lot of hotels put them in. Oh. And then there's some cars that have them. It's not the fastest charging you're going to. The Qi folks, if you really want to get crazy, they actually built a standard for the smart kitchen that comes out this year, and it will charge large appliances, so there's more power being conducted. So the idea is you'll have a blender one day that you just doesn't have a cord. You just stick it in the charging spot on your counter, and it goes. Rah!
I want a chichin.
Oh,
a chichin. Chichin. A chichin. Yes,
it's my chichin. All right, there's lots more to talk about. Gosh, there's so much to talk about.
There is.
We'll do that in a second, but I do want to show you my Bluetooth headphones. And actually, I prefer to all of the above. These are the Aftershocks, and I have to admit, completely skeptical because they use bone conduction. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to hear audio from my cheekbones.
Especially through your thick skull.
Through my sick, thick skull. And you know what?
maybe that boosts the resonance.
It does. You know what? That's so funny that you should say that. Because what you can do when you're wearing them is if you put your fingers in your ears to block the sound coming through your ear, because it's right next to your ear, the bass gets better. So this is what they look like. These are the best sport headphones I've ever had. But they're also Bluetooth talk headphones. So they're so comfortable. I wear them around all day in the house and I could just talk. It's great. The microphones work really well. You see how they sit on the side of my head like that. And the sound quality is great. This is a headphone I would recommend for anybody who works out, runs, bicycles. You don't want a headphone that blocks sound because you don't want to get run over by that truck coming up behind you. You want to be able to hear it. It's wireless Bluetooth 4.1. Multi-point pairing, which is really nice. I have it paired to all my phones. They rest just outside your ear, and they send mini vibrations through your cheekbones to your inner ear, bypassing your eardrum. They even come with earplugs. So if you wear them on the airplane and you don't want to hear the baby crying behind you, you put in the earplugs and you could still hear the music, which is wild. The wraparounds are... I actually am glad. The one thing I don't like about
these other brands where they just go in your ears, I feel like it's easy to lose that individual earpiece. And it's not that secure. This has this titanium, very lightweight titanium band, which means that they're attached and they're always sitting very comfortably on your head, and they are really secure. I'm shaking my head for those of you who are listening really, really hard. If you like headbanger music, this is good for you. Crystal clear phone calls, music. I listen to my audiobook all day wearing these around the house. I could still talk to people. I could still engage, but I could still hear. It's really fantastic. They're IP55, which means you can wear them in rain. They repel sweat and dust. 6 hours of continuous music and calls on a single charge. 10-day standby time. And they charge up fast, about an hour and a half. You'll get a 2-year warranty. These are Aftershocks, AFTERSHOKZ, Z at the end, not S. They're safer for driving in any outdoor activity because you hear what's going on, like emergency vehicles and traffic. If you're running, biking, I wear these when I bike all the time. We've got a great Aftershocks tech bundle. You can find it on the website when you go to twig.aftershocks.com. $50 off the tech bundle. That includes the Air, Trix Air, a pop socket for your phone, large portable storage case, a really nice silicone rubber storage case, portable power bank, and a traveler tumbler insulator. The whole pack. Get $50 off when you go to twig.aftershocks.com and use the code TWIG at checkout. I admit, and I bet some of you are skeptical. When I first heard about this, I thought there's no way they could sound good. They sound great. And they're the most comfortable headphones I've ever worn. And sorry to say, by the way, because we got somebody from the UK saying, I tried your Aftershocks deal and it didn't work in the UK. Yeah, it's US only. I'm sorry. Twig.aftershocks.com. Use the offer code TWIG at checkout in the US to get $50 off. But even if you don't, that's the tech bundle. But even if you don't get these, they're fantastic. They have a variety of models. Aftershocks.
At last, I cannot worry about things falling out of my damned ears because I have weird ears and nothing stays in them.
Yeah, Lisa can't wear AirPods because her ear canal is small. And so they're not comfortable at all. In fact, anytime you wear anything stuck in your ear, whether it's wired or unwired, after a while, there's fatigue. These
things just fall out.
And they fall out, which is I'm on my third pair of AirPods. It's ridiculous.
Have you seen, I presume, the AirPod beams?
No.
Romeo, yo, she's alive, don't. Oh, damn, he's wearing AirPods. You don't get it.
Let's go to Romeo. Let's go to Know Your Meme.
Okay.
Know Your Meme.
Well, that just thudded.
These are not good memes. I'm not going to show them.
Okay, I just lost the story. Did you see that Disney has reportedly pulled their ads from YouTube? That is even a good
thing. We got to talk about this. A Wired story that is huge. Apparently,
I haven't seen any of this.
I know. This just broke today. Apparently, and maybe it's Wired UK because they spelled pedophiles with an A-E. So that might be a UK thing. But it turns out that there are kind of quasi-child porn videos on YouTube, a lot of them.
Oy.
That it with young people in scanty clad outfits doing exercises or yoga, that the pedophiles have jumped on these. And in the comments, they'll even say, go to, 13 minutes, 3 seconds in. It's a big problem, and what's really, I'm sure, upsetting Disney and other companies is that these, I don't know if the videos are intended to be sketch or not. Yeah, it's Wired UK.
No, they're not intended. Most of them are just taking advantage of the fact that young people post things online.
Yeah, and little children sometimes have their butts exposed, or they're in an underwear, or you can... Anyway, I don't want to go any more on that, but these... So here's an example... of major advertisers, Shen Yun, on one of these. And then they show in the comments, hi, nice to meet you. Kisses and hugs. You're beautiful. It was a video of a young girl playing in her underwear. And another one. Ooh. Yeah. Here's L'Oreal's ad, pre-roll ad. with comments that are often little more than timestamps that direct people to sections where exposed genitalia could be seen, or a child does the splits or lifts up their top to show their nipples. This is bad for YouTube.
But the videos aren't the problem. It's the damned commenters, right? Because what are you going to do? Not let children put up their ballet things? I mean, it's the problem here is that there's sickos who ruin everything.
Yeah. On some videos, confused children who have uploaded videos of themselves playing in the garden respond to comments asking them how old they are. On one video, a young girl appears to ask another commenter why one of the videos had made him, quote, grow.
Oh, geez.
The video shows the child and her friend doing yoga is accompanied by pre-roll advertising from L'Oreal. The video has 2 million views. One of our advertisers, Grammarly, were absolutely horrified and have reached out to YouTube to rectify this immediately. This is the problem of buying ads on YouTube, frankly. So Fortnite has paused all pre-roll advertising on YouTube, Epic Games.
So this speaks to a couple things. One, as platforms get bigger and people use them. So people use these platforms, they become massive in scale. They're hard to escape, but then people can go down wormholes on their own. This is not, it's the same sort of people that if you post pictures of your kid in like a bathing suit on Instagram. But
tell me what you think of this. One video monetized, monetization's turned on, 410,000 views. A prepubescent girl performs a dance routine in a dingy flat, flashing the camera halfway through an indefinitely illegal, distressingly exploitive bare crotch shot that's shared in the comments with a timestamp. We've seen it accompanied by advertisements for Fiat and Shenyun.
Oh, that dance show. Good Lord. That's disturbing. And I think anytime you see, I mean, we'll tie this to something that I know is on the rundown. I don't know if we'll get to it, but it's talking about like Facebook using location, like police are looking at its own content to find people who want to harm its workers and employees, and talking about if that's ethical. I think the issue here is we have the ability to police this, but companies are unwilling to do so. And they're coming to a point where advertisers and the community will force them to, because it's simply,
YouTube doesn't want this because they're going to lose money. This is terrible.
Yeah, right. No,
not to mention illegal in some cases.
Right. They're no longer this cute, dark corner of the internet. And I don't mean dark in a negative way, but just when you're a public main street of the internet, you have to have main street values and mores. And they haven't wanted to admit this because they think they're still on the normal internet or the old internet. I don't know how to think about that. But
YouTube is even more complicit. Again, not intentionally, I'm sure, algorithmically complicit. Wired says YouTube doesn't just recommend you watch more videos of children innocently playing. Its algorithm specifically suggests videos that are seemingly popular with other pedophiles.
Right.
This video was monetized with the pre-roll advertising from Maybelline. Now, I don't blame these brands.
You always have to have the bad thing happen, and then you catch up. And
yeah, but YouTube's been fighting this for a long time, right?
Yeah. Jesus. Well, that depressed us.
I feel like in the case of children's pedophilia, you might want to err more on the side of, oh, maybe we'll take down a few good apples and you can rectify that afterwards.
Yeah.
That's my gut feeling. However, I don't know. I don't write algorithms for content filtering, but I feel like that should be, I mean, and I know people will go around it, but that's what, I mean, look how great China is at censoring its population.
Another way is videos about with children in them can't have comments.
Yeah, well, and I mean, there is a parenting thing. Should you, like, I try very hard not to put up videos of my kid, and I ask people not to tag her in anything. And I do that because, not necessarily for this reason, but I want her to have the freedom to be able to put these up. But soon she's going to be doing this with her friends, and not necessarily on YouTube, but on Musical.ly and other places, TikTok. And
we should point out that according to Wired, reports of pedophiles commenting on kids' channels first appeared in 2017, and YouTube promised to fix the problem. In the same year, major advertisers pulled their ads after they appeared next to extremist content, including rape apologia, anti-Semitism, and hate preachers. This is an endemic problem. And, you know, the funny thing is YouTube is getting a lot of heat for takedowns that are inappropriate. The Verge, for instance, had a pretty pathetic attempt to show how to build a computer that involved such things as putting in the power supply backwards and all sorts of, in some cases, dangerous practices. Obviously, whoever wrote the video or did the video didn't know what they were talking about. Some of the commenters, you know, so people took it and showed it and commented on it. Some of them responsibly, a lot of them responsibly saying, no, don't do, what is this guy talking about? Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Some of them got racist. The presenter was black. And of course that's terrible. The Verge, however, responded with a takedown of all of them. And YouTube took them down. And I just feel like we're seeing more and more examples. It's happening to us, too, where companies don't like the commentary and they're taking it down. Not for any legitimate reason, but they're taking it down because they don't want that content up there. And maybe the legitimate reason is it's Verge content that is being shown in the commentary. And so they're saying, well, look, it's our content. You can't do that. But we were just talking about this. Apple did this to us yesterday on our Mac Break Weekly show, not because they didn't like the commentary, but because we showed an Apple ad and commented on it. Jeff is the professor of journalism. I will ask you, that is called fair use commentary, right? Mm-hmm. And generally held to be a good defense in cases like this. YouTube has not made it easy, apparently. We're trying to get the video restored, and my people are saying there's nowhere to dispute this content ID thing. I find that hard to believe. There's got to be a way to dispute it, but they don't make it easy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
The Verge, in this case, manually submitted the takedowns. Apple has done that against us when we streamed their product announcements.
You know, there's an interesting business opportunity here. I've been thinking about this in other contexts.
Yeah, Vimeo.
There's that, yeah. Yeah, welcome to Vimeo. But there's a moral hazard here aplenty, but imagine if there were an independent auditing structure that you paid to do this for you, and that the platform is trusted.
Oh, like now,
I don't like it because it's redlining. It's for the more privileged, but at some level, when I need my passport renewed, I go to the service that does all the stuff for me and expedites it.
Someone does that for ads, and it's not the FTC. There is a middleman for advertising disputes for what's it called?
Is it the Ad Bureau or something?
In the U.S. or U.K.?
In the U.S.
Oh.
I know because Sprint and T-Mo and all the carriers get cranky with each other and submit their, like, my network's better. He says his network's better. And then you get these, like, so-and-so, whatever this bureau is, has decided. I'll look it up.
Meanwhile, and we talked about this also on Mac Break Weekly yesterday, so maybe this had something to do with it, YouTube has announced in their creator blog they're going to make the strike system clear and consistent, and they show a nice.
This is what I was asking you about. Is this clearer or more consistent?
I'm not sure. I don't know. The point of this is most people who break the community guidelines aren't doing it on purpose. So YouTube's always has a three strike system. You get three chances, and then you're banned. 94% of those who receive a first strike, according to YouTube, never get a second one, but they even thought that was too dramatic. So, starting February 25th, all channels will receive a one-time warning the first time they post content that crosses the line. And that could be a variety of things, but mostly it's over copyright, right? With no penalties to their channel except for the removal of that content. That's a takedown. This is to make sure everyone takes the time to learn about our community guidelines and then can quickly get back to creating great content and engaging with the audience. So I think consistency is fine. That's a good goal. First strike results in a 1 week freeze in the ability to upload any new content to YouTube, including live streaming and other channel activities. Strikes will expire after 90 days. The second strike in any 90-day period will result in a 2 week freeze. The third strike will result in any, if you get three strikes in a 90-day period in channel termination. So you get to have a strike every 3 months. I don't know if it's better or worse.
It's the Hank Green did this video, I think we mentioned last week or before last, that was really goes through the detail of it, and it's excellent, but it doesn't make any sense. The system is broken. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But soon we'll have Article 13, and it won't matter.
You won't put we will not. That is in Europe.
Well, but
it's still bad.
It should affect you. I mean, do you have European listeners to the IoT podcast?
I have lots.
So,
Europeans, they're really good at IoT.
I know.
I spent my holiday reading the Commons Report on Disinformation and Fake News and the Cairn Cross Review of UK Journalism and the Article 11 and 13 stuff.
And your conclusion?
I know how to have fun.
And I spent my holiday reading the Three Body Trilogy.
Oh, you read all three in one holiday period?
Oh, yeah.
You're a fast reader.
It's a good trilogy.
It's long. It's good. I've only read the first one and a little bit of the second one before I got exhausted.
Before petering out. Yeah. You're like, oh, I'm done.
Exhausted.
Anyway.
It's going to be a TV show, I guess. So you read it. How much time did you spend reading it?
Well, it was a 4-day weekend. So, I usually read like a book a day.
You read fast.
You do?
Well, like fiction. If I'm reading like
no wonder you don't have time to watch pornography. I'm just kidding you.
That's not going on my tombstone.
I just didn't have time. No, you must read very fast because those are really long books. It took me several months to get the first one done.
It took a while to get into it, but
you don't watch any TV or something. I mean, you don't eat food.
You're not human.
You're not human.
I eat food. I exercise. I play with my dog and my child. And
wow, I'm impressed. And she creates a great newsletter and website. And
I didn't work this weekend.
A fine podcast. 4 whole days she didn't work, and she read 3 books.
And she makes queso.
And makes queso.
Okay, queso is like really easy. You dump a...
So...
hold on there.
Negotiations continue in the European Parliament over Articles 11 and 13. Is there... Julia Reda, who is a member of the EU Parliament...
It passed the first vote, I think, today, and there's further votes. And there, some countries are saying... Whole countries are saying, no, this is gonna harm innovation in the internet. But the big countries... let's see, where do I find that?
Julia Reda's blog is the place if you want to read more about this.
She is great.
JuliaReda.eu, R-E-D-A.
Pirate Party, the Greens.
She's in she calls it the Pirate Party, the Greens.
She is Pirate Party. Okay.
Then yeah. She's Pirate Party. I think she is
that's official.
Yeah. Nevertheless, you've heard us talk about it many times. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but Article 13 is the one that would require us and anybody that uses content, and all of our shows are based on, commentary on other people's content, to get licenses. and furthermore, if you're Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, you can't post anything that hasn't been licensed. So you have a huge burden to make sure that everything that you have on there, if there is copyright material by anybody else, there's no fair use.
There is. I see. There is. Oh. I read the text. There is an exception for criticism and fair use, but as Larry Lessig famously said, fair use is the right to hire an attorney.
It's a defense.
It's a defense, and the platforms are going to say, we don't. That's too nuanced for us. If somebody else made it, you can't put it up. Period. Because the liability is huge.
And then the Article 11 is a link tax.
Oh, I hate this.
Which is very similar to what Germany tried to do.
And so, Spain did.
Yeah, and Spain did to their detriment. Reproducing more than single words of very short extracts of news stories will also require a license with no exception. Including nonprofit blogs.
So the Commons report had this strange factor in there that not only do they consider, because GDPR, they consider, there's a wide range of things they consider to be personal data, like your IP address. They consider
that's a really tough one. That's a tough one.
It's awful. So now they're proposing to go the next step any inference about you, you own. So everything about machine learning that's about finding patterns and making predictions, now suddenly they're trying to propose that you own that. Now, what the heck that means and how you do anything about that. So Amazon comes along and they want to recommend, these galoshes because you bought those boots.
You can't make inference without having someone's underlying data. And that's always been the issue with GDPR.
But even if you have permission for the underlying,
right?
Now they're saying basically you need permission for the inference.
Which is silly because to get rid of that threat, all you do is take away permission to use the underlying data. What that's trying to get to is Amazon might have data on my favorite galoshes and I'm trying to think. Someone else may have data on my foot fungus powder purchases. And if they put those two things together, they might infer, like my insurance or something, that I'm trying to give myself foot fungus by wearing terrible galoshes. What is this analogy?
I don't know. I thought you were going to get an ad for fungus fighting galoshes. That would be good.
I was trying to turn this into something nefarious, but I really should have started
aggregating
with
data from disgusting. Two different sources into an inference.
Yes. So, but really all I have to do is stop the data about my foot fungus powder purchases again.
Right.
Really weird.
You can't make an inference if you don't have the original data.
So here's on pages 16 and 17, inferred data is therefore regarded by the ICO as personal data. On the page before it says, get this, geeks, watch out, geeks. If tech companies, including technical engineers involved in creating the software for the companies, are found to have failed to meet their obligations under such code, the independent regulator should have the ability to launch legal proceedings against them with the prospect of large fines being administered as the penalty for noncompliance with the code. So you do something for Facebook or Google, now they're putting the employee in the case of having to know every implication and basically have their own attorney.
What's weird is they
become liable.
Well, that's because they can't go after the tech firms, so they're going to go after their employees. You always in a legal fight go after the weak link and hope it
stays. They can go over the tech firms. They're going after them both.
Yeah, but this is a much bigger stick. From a strategy perspective, this isn't going to make it into the end law, but this is a really good way to start your negotiation.
Well, don't forget there are people in the European Parliament, like the German member of EP, Sven Schulze, or as I call him, Sergeant Schulz. I know nothing.
About anything?
I don't know anything. He thinks Google, because he's getting so many protests over Article 11 and 13, he thinks it's all coming from Google because they all seem to come from people with Gmail addresses.
So I did a slightly better translation of his tweet.
Yes.
He said, now every second I'm getting messages about Articles 11 and 13, and they all come from Gmail. And never mind that the information in them is wrong. Google, do you really need to take this action? Idiot.
I know you're angry, but...
Idiot. Yeah, I know you're angry.
I know you're angry, Google, but really? Oh.
He's a member of... He's a member of the European Parliament, I think, right?
Yes, MEP.
MEP.
If we could just get all the old white guys out, we'd be fine.
I couldn't agree more, Stacey. I could not agree more.
And worse, he's been retweeted 212 times.
I'll bring my Kamala hat in.
Sergeant Schulz, I know nothing.
Yeah, unfortunately, all the jokes back are in German. Or Swedish or whatever, German. Yeah. So, yeah, it's
wow.
It's pretty hilarious.
Man, Google, I know you're angry, but you have this fake, really necessary action. I think the English needs to be translated.
Hashtag odd things.
Yeah, hashtag fake, hashtag Google. And he did the hashtag right. He separated the hashtag from the text by a space, so it doesn't even work. Hashtag upload filter, hashtag article 13. Actually, it does work. Look, hashtag Gmail, hashtag Google, hashtag fake.
Plus, he put the space in.
Yeah, but it might still work because it looks like they're blue, which means they are links.
Oh, that's true. They might. That's right. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway,
Anyway, these are the people.
These are the people
who are taking over the internet. These are, and when you see me go crazy about this, this
but
is
I think
why.
There's, I think there's bad people on both sides.
Oh,
well, yeah.
to coin a phrase.
Thanks.
No, seriously, I think it's coming from both ends. It's coming from the ignorant regulators, but honest to God, they're getting ammunition from things like YouTube, you know, recommending more more like this.
But listen to how you just phrased that. YouTube, because you explained it earlier before you went into devil's advocate mode.
Well,
which
I don't
is your
blame
job,
them, but I sort of do blame them.
Welcome to our future, folks. Tools are going to be out there. People are going to misuse them, and then you got to catch up to the misuse.
Well, what about
and every time we have this horrible shock that it's occurred? Yes, bad people will do bad things. That's not surprising. The issue is not the issue is that in some level, but the issue is what do we expect the platforms to do, and how quickly do we expect them to do it,
right.
And how do we hold them to that? And I'm fine for all those three things.
Yeah,
it's the fake shock that somebody did something bad in the world.
You know that
drives me crazy.
You know that almost all the people who these days espouse the flat Earth theory learned about it on YouTube. I don't blame YouTube for that, by the way. But, you know, it just shows you.
Well, it's the thing we discussed last week about the anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
Well, did you see Pinterest is just no longer serving up the search results? I didn't know how you felt about that, Jeff, but I was curious.
I'm fine with it. I think, you know, I've been thinking about it. So Zuckerberg said in his interview with Jonathan Zittrain at Berkman Center a couple of interesting things. And one was that there was a moment in time when he was considering just getting rid of all political advertising because he couldn't deal with it. And there is a point at which if you're Facebook, say, you know what? Not only are we not going to promote news, news is forbidden. No news. Forget it. No news. It gets us in trouble. It's a mess. This is for people with their cats. No news. That would be a bad thing for society. But if you're Facebook, and I own no stock in Facebook, but I did gather money from Facebook for my university. I have no, I'm independent on Facebook and receive no money personally from Facebook. If you're Facebook and a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders, at some point you'd say, F it, man, just F that news. That's in essence what Larry and Sergey did early on because they were really interested in news. And then all these damn journalists came after them. They were all difficult and they kind of said, F them. And they pulled back any effort until it became a matter of PR and lobbying and brand. That's when they started making friends to the news business again. And now they're making it and they're doing a very good job and it's working for them and it's valuable and it should be, I think. But if I were at some point, Google doesn't make any money off Google News. At some point, just say, oh, to heck with it. Go on from Europe. Go on.
So who's Shane Dawson?
I don't link to any news sites. Fine.
Tell me about Shane Dawson. Who's this Shane Dawson when he's at home?
I don't know.
He's a YouTuber. Kevin Roos writing about it in the New York Times. Last month, YouTube star Shane Dawson uploaded his new project, a nearly two-hour documentary called Conspiracy Theories with Shane Dawson. In the video set to a spooky instrumental soundtrack, Dawson unspooled a series of far-fetched hypotheses, among others.
Did you do the Chuck E. Cheese one?
Yes. So I'll get to that. iPhones secretly record their owners' favorite. Every utterance. Popular children's TV shows contain subliminal messages urging children to commit suicide. The recent string of deadly wildfires in California was set by the military using a high-powered laser called a directed energy weapon. None of it's true. Maybe he's a comedian. I don't know. The video has received more than 30 million views. The follow-up's drawn more than 20 million views and started a public feud with Chuck E. Cheese's, the restaurant chain, which was forced to deny claims it recycles customers' uneaten pizza slices into brand-new pizzas.
This is a good one. Dig into this one. Look up the photos.
Okay.
Look up the photos.
It's a comedy, right? This guy's a comedian.
Well, but I'm telling you, Leo, look at that pizza.
Looks pretty good.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No, because that's not, if you try to put those together, you wouldn't end up with one round pizza.
Oh, you're from New York. You just have
those
pizza. You have pizza prejudice.
Clearly came from other pizzas. Notice that pepperoni slice has a slice on it and it doesn't go over to the next slice. I'm telling you, Leo, there's a conspiracy at Chuck E. Cheese. This is me play acting, folks. I'm not really saying this about Chuck E. Cheese, but this is the game. That's not an actual pizza. It's recycled slices.
And this is from Shane Dawson's Twitter. memories of Chuck E. Cheese pizzas. One of them is half cheese, half pepperoni. I don't. Okay.
And by the way, I'm not believing this. I'm just having fun.
I don't know. Oh, no one believes it except maybe. I don't know. Does Shane?
Well, actually, you do look at some of the pictures, and you don't know how they would make the pie.
You're like, that could be two different pies. Yeah.
It could also be somebody who took two different pies, ordered them, put them together, and made the picture to make a conspiracy, which is more likely the case.
But, by the way, lots of tweets from like this. I work at Chuck E. Cheese. I can tell you, we literally do not recycle our pizza slices. Like, that's whack.
Instead, we're in the back with a child sex ring.
I've seen kitchen guys make fresh pizza all the time. A new order comes in, and we see the game room guys throwing out leftover pizza on the table. So, proof positive. Dawson joined YouTube in 2005, became one of its bigger stars several years later when he began posting his comedy sketches on the site. After rising to fame, he faced backlash for his use of blackface and racial stereotypes in skits.
Wow, somebody who is not an awesome person does well on YouTube.
What a shock.
I am shocked.
I'm telling you, I'm moving our entire network to Vimeo. This is just, I mean, honestly... By the way, Dawson's real name is Shane Lee Yaw. I don't believe that for a minute. He has 20 million subscribers, and this is what scares me, a devoted teenage fan base. Clearly, he makes content that's going to, he knows how to make content that's going to do well.
Yeah, and as long as we are in a mass-based, volume-based, click-based ad structure, the motives for everybody are perverse. Including CNN, including the maker of the video, including YouTube, including Facebook, all of them.
But does YouTube stop recommending Dawson's videos, even though it will cost them a lot of money?
At some point, they're going to. It depends on the pressure, right? It's countervailing pressures, and some people are going to say, obviously, he's joking. It's a joke. I get it. Because at some point, because what you end up with then is that at some point they start banning Onion, and I would scream bloody murder. But if somebody out there believes the Onion, as it happens all the time, you know, Chinese newspaper reports Onion story, right? We got to get rid of that. So
yeah, no, you make a good point.
So what do we expect? We don't really have the discussion about what we truly expect them to do and follow through. Do we expect them to get rid of political ads? Do we expect them to get rid of all anti-vax stuff? Do we expect them to not accept videos of children? You know, where do we want the line to be? We kind of have to say so as a society. Whether it's the law or not, they're gonna enforce the norms of society, and society doesn't know what the heck she wants. So we're going through a process of negotiating this now, and they get blamed for it all, and sometimes they should be blamed for it all. But a lot of times we as a society should be blamed for not making up our mind about what matters and not agreeing. Sorry.
I think they wait too long.
Yes, I agree.
I think they have the tools. They just don't want to deploy it because it is expensive. It does put some liability in their hands. And I think there are some things that we can all universally agree on as being a problem. So conspiracy theory, dude, not really. Things like child pedophilia, yes.
Anti-vaxxers?
I was like, anti-vaxxers? Oh, so iffy. How do you...
Oh, okay.
You know, well, so, and this is where I think the tech companies, I don't think there should be a ban on vaccination content. I do think figuring out how to tweak your algorithms so they don't continually feed into paranoia.
They choose not to promote that, yes.
Probably the way to go there. Like, I think we need to be having technically informed discussions that we're not really having today. Jeff has left.
You've finally done it, Stacey. Congratulations.
I was like, man, that technically informed discussions, that was too much for him.
Pedantry. So this is a whole shit. This is a post I haven't written yet. Don't worry. That's not my writing. This is what I'm writing about. So there's a brilliant professor named Phil Napoli, who's now down at Duke, who wrote a paper that scares me. And it says, the headline is, what if more speech is no longer the solution? First Amendment theory meets fake news in the filter bubble. Mm-hmm. You have the First Amendment is under attack because people don't know what to do with this stuff. So the idea that less speech is better than more speech is antithetical to my soul as an American, antithetical to my beliefs in the First Amendment. But there's talk about that going on. Then you saw Justice Thomas saying that maybe the First Amendment is being overutilized yesterday. And you have these European reports saying, the platform should just get rid of a lot of speech. And when I read the comments thing, again and again in the margin, I wrote China, Iran. Put those tools in the hands of China and Iran, which they're doing on their own, and then the UK starts to look like China or Iran. We've got to recognize that speech is speech, and the problem is more that people believe stupid things. That's education is what we need. I don't mean media education. I mean education.
I would not disagree with you. I mean, I spend a lot of time teaching my daughter about this. I think we probably need to change the curriculum a little bit to give people more media literacy or just internet literacy.
They went through that. Because the problem I have with that is, I mean, to some extent, sure, but that's not the solution. That's media centric, I think, and acts as if you just had the user manual for our stuff, you'd be fine. No, you got to have the ability to think generally. Nothing to do with the internet.
Well, so critical thinking is important, but I think when you're teaching critical thinking, using examples from today's media is really relevant. Fine. And some people are never going to think critically. Some people are going to be like, I mean, some people surf the internet the same way, you know, people used to come home and sit down and turn on Law and Order and just sit there. And it's to let your brain rest. The problem is when they do that, they're not just, it's no longer a lean back. They're asking you to engage and to forward and to make a statement about things. So when
it's also true that your idiot Uncle Joe and your friend Joey on the playground have always done this. Right. And so it's not anything to do with the internet in the end. It's just, there's other opportunities, but there's also more opportunities to actually look up stuff to say, Joe, you're full of it. You're wrong. But we never talk about the good. We never, ever talk about the good that comes. And that upsets me.
I know,
Joe. Is Calm a sponsor this week?
No, I wish it were.
I think I need it.
I can show you something almost as exciting. It's my Aura ring. Can we talk about that? Then we'll come back and talk about
other things. Me.
I love. Yeah, this is good.
You have such good sponsors.
I know we do, don't we? Aura. Actually, the way we found out about this was kind of interesting. Kevin Rose told me about it. Kevin was on Triangulation. He was wearing a ring just like this, and I said, "What's that? That's cool." He said, "Oh, that's my Aura. Let me tell you about it." And he went and told me all about it. He said, "I'll get you one," because he's an advisor for the company. They're a Finnish company, and he wrote to the founder of Aura, and they sent me a ring, and I've been wearing it for 6 months, and it is the best fitness activity and sleep tracker I have ever used. So it's a Finnish company. Number one, I think privacy is very important nowadays when we wear something that records our every move. The Aura ring is governed by GDPR. They're a Finnish company. They have very strong privacy policies. If you're worried about that, read all about it. On the Aura site, OuraRing.com, OuraRing.com. But let me tell you what it does, because it's really cool. Inside the Aura ring are a whole host of sensors, infrared optical pulse measurement. And if it's on your finger, it turns out that's a really good place to do that, better than the wrist. You know, sometimes people with the Apple Watches say, well, I have a tattoo or I have a very hairy wrist. It's not very accurate. This is much more accurate because I don't remember the physiological details. You can read about it on the site. But because of where the ring is measuring, there's a much more clearer and much more accurate measurement of the blood flow there. But that's not all that's in there. It's also got a 3D accelerometer, a gyroscope, and a body temperature sensor. And because of it, it knows all the activity, of course. It's, you know, it measures steps, but also my heart rate. I can measure heart rate variability, which is a really important indicator, it turns out. The higher your heart rate variability, the better, because that means your heart is responding better. This is the app, And the Aura Ring, by the way, can store quite a bit of data. I think 6 weeks of data in the ring. But every day I open up the app and it copies it over using Bluetooth LE. It's very quick and easy. I could see, let me go to yesterday because I got a good ready. So you get a readiness score, which is based on all of this. Although it noted I had an elevated body temperature. Oh, that's kind of interesting. And here it is. It was up a little bit. Often that's a sign that you might be getting sick or something's going on. Got a great sleep score. It measures everything, including your awake time, your rapid eye movement, dream time, 2 hours, light sleep, 4.5 hours, 56 minutes of deep sleep. That's great. And you can drill down on any of these facts and get more information about it. You can record activities. And if you look at the readiness report, it'll give you a lot more information about what that score comes from. Body temperature, resting heart rate, recovery index. And here's the heart rate variability. The higher, the better, which is interesting. That usually means that your system is more robust. You can get information. Here's a really useful one. You saw what a great score in an hour of deep sleep. And I thought, what did I do yesterday that I didn't do the night before? And I realized I took a little tiny melatonin pill and that apparently made a big difference. I could see definitely how exercise affects and improves my sleep. Resting heart rate is a good indicator of overall health, things like that. I love this thing. This is fantastic. This is the Aura Ring. It's made out of titanium, so it's super lightweight. They have a variety of colors and shapes. There's silver, there's black. There's Stealth, which is what I'm wearing, which is a matte black. The other black is kind of piano black, shiny. There's even a diamond version, which would be a great gift for a special person in your life. $299 for silver or black, $399 for Stealth, diamond $999. But I want you to order it right now because these things sell off the shelves so fast. At this point, they can't promise to get it to you any sooner than May. But you might say, well, I'll wait till May. No, because then it'll be August. Just order it. You will be really glad. It's a great gift for mom, for Mother's Day, for a graduate coming up in June. You'll get it by then for sure. Activity insights, daily feedback that helps you better understand your body, improve your health, reach your goals. It is fascinating to see. This is the best way to measure all this stuff. You can charge it up in just a matter of hours, and it holds its charge all week. What I usually do is I take it off, charge it. The charging thing is just a little circle base. I put it on my dresser, and it's a USB charger. The ring goes right on it, and it charges up very fast. But also, you could do what I do, which is just charge it for a few minutes a day so it's always ready. I just really love this thing. This is the Oura, Aura Ring. And I think you're going to love it. But don't delay because they sell out so fast. They're making them as fast as they can. It's hard to make because it's a very precise device. OuraRing.com. If you use the offer code TWIT at checkout, you'll get $50 off your purchase. Order it today to get it by May. OuraRing.com. And the offer code is TWIT. I just love this thing. I've worn every fitness device known to man. And this is the one. This really is the one.
Maybe I'm going to Helsinki at the end of March. Maybe I'll pop in.
They're not in Helsinki. They're in. I can't remember the other. No. It's a well known town in Finland.
Espoo.
Thank you.
Nokia.
Yeah, if you go to visit Nokia, you could see them. I bet you there's some people who used to work at Nokia over there, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty much any tech company in Finland.
Yeah, really cool. So Google says, we may not have told you there was a microphone in there, but it wasn't supposed to be a secret.
So, okay.
We're talking about the Nest. We're talking about the Nest Secure, which is what they're. We talked about this already.
We talked about it. So we talked about the news that it was opt-in only because they were going to enable a microphone that had been in the speaker.
So it was announced. No.
So yes, when they announced this functionality, they said, by the way, it's opt-in. You have to opt into this service because we're not going to turn on the microphone unless you've opted in.
Oh.
Now, at that point, though, a lot of people were like, wait, what?
There's a microphone? Because it wasn't in the original specs.
Right. And okay. So Kevin and I talked about this actually last week with regard to smart televisions. This isn't a Nest problem. This is a connected device problem.
A lot of TVs have microphones in them, yeah.
Yes. And so we talked about it on our show this morning. And this Friday in the newsletter, I'm going to focus on this. I'm putting together, and this is not just blatant self-promotion, but I'm putting together a list of disclosures for connected devices, like what you need to tell people.
Yes. And a microphone's a big one. Camera too.
Microphone, camera, but also, you know, speakers and a ton of the devices you have in your house that are smart devices, they have additional sensors. They have humidity, temperature. Oh. Like a lot of the Hue motion detector also detects temperature. Does that matter for most people? Probably not.
Why does it? Because I have one in my office, a Hue motion sensor.
Because one day they might want to add functionality. That's why they do it.
It's all part of a system on a chip, probably, right?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But yes, it's relatively cheap. And, you know, if you use that data, you can kind of gain some new insights. I mean, basically, the money is in the data. If the money's in the data, you put as many sensors that are relatively cheap as you can, because who knows what algorithms you can derive that will tell you something new and exciting about someone.
So you think it's credible when Google says, this is what a Google representative told Business Insider, the company made an error. The on-device microphone was never intended to be a secret and should have been listed in the tech specs. That was an error on our part. You find that credible?
I find it incredible that they wouldn't realize that this is a problem. I find, like, secret sensors in your IoT devices have been historically kept secret for competitive reasons. So I believe that Google did keep it a secret and did it because they wanted to be able to announce a new feature that was competitively exciting, right? That could be a competitive advantage.
If you say on the box, microphone inside, people are going to say, well, how can I use that? What?
You don't have, yes and no. You don't have to say on the box, microphone inside. But you can say, I mean, I looked at the Nest Guard press materials. There's nothing in the press materials. So at a bare minimum, when you send out those review units, every review unit you ever get comes with a little booklet that gives you all the tech specs and everything you need as a reviewer. That's not in there. And
That should be there. And if it's in there, you put it, you say, a microphone has been included. It is not enabled for possible future use or something like that
transparency and control.
Yeah.
As a principle.
I think they could have done that and without any harm. I'm trying to think of why they might not have. You think it's just tone deafness? Like they don't understand?
No, like I said, competitiveness. You don't want to say, like, if there's a microphone in there, and yes, your competitors are going to do teardowns of your products.
Yeah, but they're going to know. They're going to know more than anybody else does. They're going to say, oh, there's a microphone in here. In 5 seconds, they're going to look at it and say, look at the microphone. Right?
Maybe a little longer than 5 seconds, but yes, I mean, they could see it.
It's not hard to see a microphone, I would think. Unless you've never looked at chips before or something, maybe.
I know, and they do, but I don't think, I'll put it this way. I don't think Google was nefarious in not disclosing this, but I do think it was dumb that they didn't disclose it.
I'm not clear that it's not nefarious. I mean,
all the time.
I know, we give Google pass after pass after pass because we feel good about Google. We like Google. But at some point, you got to start saying, as people have now done with Facebook, nobody gives Facebook a pass anymore.
I think it's such a widespread industry practice, which is why, like, Google, if it was nefarious, Google is not alone in having these nefarious aims. And
pointed out, many, many TVs have microphones.
TVs have it.
And like by the way, they're on and used.
Sensor.
Yeah, they're on and used.
Your doorbell, your Ring doorbell, the old ones used to have a temperature sensor in them. Again, it's not used. You may not know it as a user. That's not exposed to you.
I care if they know what temperature it is outside. I do care if there's a microphone in something that I don't know about. Called what we call that in the business is a bug.
Yes. But right? There are also
if the Russians had done it.
Yes.
We would have said.
But some of these other sensors are equally problematic. You just don't know how they're being used today. So a humidity sensor or a decibel sensor, which are in things.
I grant you all of that. My question now is, why do we give Google a pass? What is it about Google that we give them a pass? If the Russians had done this, if Facebook had done this, no pass. If the TV manufacturers do it, no pass. If my car had a microphone in it, oh, wait a minute, it does.
Yeah.
By the way, as we as you know, because we both own Teslas, you can shout at your car, there's a bug, would you report this back to the factory? Which I think is pretty funny. I don't know, Jeff, do you? I think we do give Google a pass. Should we keep giving Google a pass?
Yeah.
Okay. If you say so, I'll do it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we should give them a pass because they're nice guys.
I've now ruled. That's it.
They're nice. They're nice guys.
Yeah. All guys, but they're nice.
Nice. They're nice people. Google would never do anything to spy on us.
They now say that they have a microphone in their Nest Guard. They changed their specs. That's good.
Yeah, because they got caught.
Yes.
Yes, we put a microphone in your great seal that we put in embassy. Yes, we do that now. That's for your protection. It there detects a fire alarm going off.
There are lots of mics in many of your things in your home.
I know.
Why does the TV have a mic?
That's my favorite. So it can hear some signals that are sent to track conversation. No, to track your what you're watching.
You're viewing. Okay.
It's like, why does a chicken cross the road? So it can hear. yeah. And in fact, they can tell advertisers if you're, you know, they can tell people, they're watching Channel 4, or they can do all sorts of things. They have recognition.
Interestingly, you can't actually buy a television anymore that doesn't have, that doesn't have some kind of tracking on it.
Wow.
I would love to find someone, not everyone owns these yet, but you know, if you guys know of a television, I am very curious to find a television that doesn't have a microphone in it. And
I got
a
one
lot
down
of
the basement I can sell you.
It's Zenith.
It's big.
Yeah, the microphone goes in before the name
one.
Goes
so,
on.
Yes. So this is where we're heading, which is why we need to talk about what needs to be in these disclosures and have these discussions. Because, you know, very soon you're not going to be able to buy new, you know, washers and refrigerators without connectivity.
Microphones.
We've got to get to the point. I mean, so go back to your point about competitive advantage, Stacey. I think that the risk of pissing off your own users and inviting regulation is worse than the risk of your competitor finding out that you have a microphone. And I mean, I wrote this about Facebook, that Facebook's culture of opacity is killing it. And they don't really have a competitor. So the rule ought to be at Facebook, whatever you're doing, if there were a camera on you and we showed the world you were doing it, you'd proudly stand up and say, yes, I did that because it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Everything they do should bear scrutiny of transparency. Same for Google. Same for any of the companies. More transparency is good. The risk is greater on the other end that you're going to get caught like this. Oh, we forgot to tell people about the microphone and they're going to be freaked out. It would have been far better to just have a little fine print on every device and all the geeks come out and look at the specs and say, wow, look at all the sensors. Isn't that cool? And they'd be far better. That's all I'm saying. So no pass, Leo. I took back the pass.
Yeah.
Retroactively taking away the pass.
Because I am deciding who gets a pass. Because Leo gave me that power.
You're in charge. Google did backtrack on something. It only proposed a modification to Chrome that would have blocked ad blockers. Now, here's another one where I think Google gets a pass from some people. They didn't implement it. They asked for comment. They said this would improve performance by eliminating the capability. In fact, they even had Ghostery, which would be one of the things blocked, carried out a study that found that ad blockers actually pretty much speed up the browser. They have a sub-millisecond impact on network requests, but because they block all those big, heavy ads and flash and all that stuff, they actually speed up the browser. So, in effect, this modification to Chrome would have slowed things down, not It's intended to speed up and Google back down. Some people, paranoid people, people who do not give Google a pass, said, well, really, the reason they wanted to do this is to break ad blockers. But after all, they gave us a chance to comment, and now they're backing down. Anything to be said about that?
I think they have the right to block ad blockers.
Ooh, that's a very good one. I like that. Tell me about that.
Well, I think well, I'll put it differently on a media company. If the New York Times says you can't come to our site,
that's fine.
If you don't pay, well, the same for Google.
So I use, and I have started using now in all my systems, the Brave browser, which is a Chromium-based browser. So it's basically identical to Chrome. That has a lot of nice features, including a built-in ad blocker, tracking blockers.
Thief.
Yeah, I'm on ZDNet's site. 18 ads and trackers were blocked. It does HTTPS everywhere, which we all agree is a good thing. It blocks fingerprinting methods, and it makes it incredibly easy to switch off because this is, they call it shields. You could turn the shields up or down. So if I go to a site that says, you know, like I'll go to iMore. Here's a good example. iMore does this now. Our friend Renee Ritchie's site puts a little sweet big-eyed kitten on there and says, oh, it looks like you're using an ad blocker. We use ads to keep our content free. Please support us by whitelisting us. By the way, if you press continue with ad blocker, it does let you go on. But you know what I'm going to do? Because I like iMore, I'm going to shields down on this site, and I'm going to get all those big fat ads. And by the way, the page is still loading because there's a lot of ads on that. But I want Renee to have a make a living. So I think this is a good choice. It also, Brave has something really interesting. I was going to make this my pick, but I'll do it a little bit earlier. Brave has something really interesting, and I know you are aware of this because we've talked about this before. The ability to send money to Brave payments to sites that you visit. So you can establish, they use a cryptocurrency or a currency of some kind called the BAT. You can put money, funds into the account. I even got a grant from just random grant for BATs. And then as you visit sites, if you fund it, those sites will get some money. I don't know if they, let's see, I guess show only included sites. So I don't know if you have to do something to participate, but see, here's the Washington Post, Instagram, and Gadget. I kind of like this model. How about this model, Jeff? Instead of reading the ads, I just send them some money.
Wait, we just spent the whole like other third of the show complaining about people not thinking about the stuff they're forwarding on Facebook, and you expect people to like look for sites they like and
no, not everybody, just me.
It's this like, is that's this not really is the a tenable model. Micropayments will save us beam. If only people could give a dime, there'd be a lot of dimes, it'd be okay. I have no,
another reason why this is kind of maybe not going to fly is it requires Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, or its own bat coin.
Have you heard of Tony Hale's Scroll? You know, Tony Hale was the founder of Chartbeat.
Yes.
And so he started a new company called Scroll.
Scroll. We used Chartbeat for a long time as an analytic tool.
Right. Oh, did they just buy Nuzzled? Or is that
they
another
just bought
one?
Nuzzled. Well, Scroll, okay. His new company, Scroll, just bought Nuzzled. Scroll bought
Jonathan Abrams Nuzzle?
Yes. Keep it alive. It's good news.
Good.
Great news. And Tony,
I have five
Tony's Nuzzled great.
Subscribers. I get email every week about them.
So Scroll will give you an ad-free experience. You'll give money to Scroll, and Scroll will divvy that up across the sites. And Tony's not saying that he's going to save all of journalism. He's just going to say for some portion of people who are irritated by ads, and ad blockers don't work very well, you can go to the New York Times or one of their publishers. Who do they have here? They have a whole bunch of publishers signed up. BuzzFeed, Box, Atlantic, SB Nation. And you will get a guaranteed full ad-free experience, and they will get a share of the money you give. And if the ads just really bother you, but you feel guilty about ad blockers, or you don't think they're good enough, or they're ugly, or they're slow, this is an alternative for those people, a set size of the market that he's going after.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wish him luck.
Anyway, I'm using Brave now. So now, if Google made that change, it would have probably happened in Brave.
Starving journalists.
I've always used ad blockers.
Shame on you.
You should find a better way to make money.
Can't block my ads.
Are we going to go to our sponsor now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a better way, right? No, actually, I unblock the ad blockers on sites that I regularly use. Because, I want to pay for those sites.
Kevin would like you to add about Chromebooks.
Yes, for instance, perfect example. Perfect example.
Let me. I was there just today, and I see the ads because I'm a nice guy.
His ads are like AI generated. They're fancy ads.
He barely has any ads, so I'm not too upset about that.
Wait for it.
Now, I hate this because about Chromebooks is going to show. Oh, you know why I don't see any ads? I have currently been blocking them. 37 ads and trackers blocked. Wow. One fingerprinting method blocked. Does he know about all this?
He has one network. You know what I hate? Have you seen these green box ads?
No.
What?
I don't know if you can see this or not. These are the only ads I see. Can you see this? No, you can't see it.
Does he know that Xfinity has an ad on his site? It's not bad. I love you, Kevin. Of course, I'm not going to block ads on your site. But
they're actually relevant to your interests, I think.
I'm not going to allow you to send me notifications. Sorry.
That's okay.
It really bothers me that every site I go to now says, allow me.
No.
Can we send you notifications? That's as bad as the
question. You can turn that off in Chrome.
Can you?
Yeah.
But sometimes I want them.
Oh, well then.
I've been looking.
You should not turn those off.
Are you sure there's a way to turn that off?
I'm pretty sure. Hold on.
Yeah, I think there is, yeah.
Because there's a way to turn it off after the fact, but I don't know of a way to
allow or block notifications from all site on Chrome.
Oh, good.
If you say Chrome, turn off notifications, if you Google that, you will get the support Google snippet.
But I don't want to turn off. I don't want to turn off notifications. That's the wrong thing. I want to turn off the request to show notifications.
Oh, right. That's a different word.
Because I like notifications because my Google Calendar, for instance, does notifications. I don't want that to turn off.
I want the New York Times to be notifications.
Some notifications I want. I just don't want to be asked every single time I go to a site.
I know. You would never, ever want a notification from.
No. Google is going to do a big announcement on March 19th. We're going to stream it. If they stream it, we will cover it at the Game Developers Conference. What? Google Game Developers Conference? The theory is it could be the long-telegraphed gaming service from Google, and that would be very interesting. Project Stream, a subscription game streaming service. Microsoft is working on one, not out yet. Sony has one. There are a number of companies that also do this. But Google is a big player, if you get my drift. Be very interesting. So we will cover that March 19th, 1 p.m. Eastern. What day of the week is that? Is that one of our – it's probably – I think it's a – is it – what do we decide? Is that – anyway. It's 2 days after St. Patrick's Day. That's what it is. Can you just Google March 19th? Yeah, you can. It's a Tuesday. So we'll be juggling shows on that day. That's right. We'll move iOS today, I think, something like that. Let's see. I think it'd be good to do the Google changelog.
Whoa.
That was a little too fast. That was a little too fast. I always wanted to be leo.dev, and Google's got it. .dev, the new top-level domain. As you know, what Google does with these top-level domains is they roll them out slowly so you can register it, but at great cost in the first days. Let's just see if I can get leo.dev and how much it would cost me. Look at all of these different registrars. Well, can I use Google for this? There we go. Click Google Domains. Of course, Hover would be the one I would choose. And, it's only $3,500 plus $360 a year.
It is down from $11,000.
It's gone down. It goes down every day. It'll continue to go down every day until it gets to the bottom price. Oh, I didn't mean to add that to my cart. Stop.
Jane, stop this crazy thing.
Stop this thing, Jane.
Jane told me to click it again, and it went away. It does go down, and I think at the end of the month, it'll only be $360 a year, but I think that's the final price. So it's expensive for leo.dev.
It is a three-letter domain.
Is that why?
Those are pretty expensive.
Or is Google just... I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
It's not against you. You are not the center of the universe.
No, no. One. I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not price gouging.
Null was the same price. N-U-L-L.
No, no. I'm not blaming me. I'm not saying me. And I wasn't going to say that, Karsten. Dope. I'm not saying it's because of leo.dev. I'm saying all.dev. And that the issue is that Google's price gouging. But yep. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I just
How much did they pay for
.dev?
I don't know.
A 10-letter domain, and it was $3,500 and $12 a year.
Yeah, that's because somebody else had it or something, right?
I don't know.
I mean, Google, I don't know how this stuff companies purchased these TLDs.
Yeah, but
right?
You can get it at GoDaddy, and GoDaddy's also charging that.
The same.
Yeah.
Oh, there's probably something associated with the legal structure. You know, who knows the answer to all of this?
Who?
Your husband.
Oh, no, exactly. Wait a minute. GoDaddy's only charging $479.99 every year for it.
$479 every year?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Google's higher up front or possibly lower if it's not interesting. Andrew says we don't know how much Google paid for .dev.
Or does
the other applicant he thinks was Amazon, but he would have to check.
So Google does own .dev. Okay. Yeah, I guess it is in the changelog. Interestingly, GoDaddy, to make as a little value add, throws in an SSL certificate. So actually, that price is not so bad because you get an SSL certificate with it. Anyway, pre-registration at the normal price, which is probably $360, opens at the end of the month, February 28th. That developers are going to want this. .dev, right? That's a great... I think that's great.
I think companies trying to attract developers will want that, but that may just be me.
Yeah.
Like, I would put my developer blog on that site, or any... If I was Twilio, if you go to twilio.dev, I would imagine that you would find cool tools.
Jeff, do you still give Google the benefit of the doubt on Google AMP?
What now? Are you going to go into AMP rant? I missed that story.
I could, but I won't. I'll avoid the AMP rant this week. Using AMP to make display ads safer, faster, and better for users. Isn't that what
you're... Yeah, this is what's coming, is trying... Because the problem on AMP, publishers complain about, is the ads don't come fast enough because the advertisers aren't AMP or they're slow.
Right.
So trying to force the advertisers to give you a better experience. And it's not just speed. It's also, I was at one page today, and the stuff comes down from the top. It comes up from the bottom. It comes in. There was not one line of text on the page.
Yeah.
It was all invading ads. And AMP doesn't allow that crap. So, yes, good for AMP.
Okay.
Not the answer you wanted.
No, I knew what you would say. Smart. I'm not going to do these stories. Fighting disinformation across our products. Smart regulation for combating illegal content. How about interpreter mode with Google Assistant?
Ooh.
Didn't we talk about that?
Did we talk about that?
Is that the one where you talk about that with the Google Assistant?
But now you can do it with, like, if there's a Google Home. Oh, yeah, we did. We showed a checking into the hotel. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I vaguely remember.
Well, no, wait. That was a demo of it. Is it actually working now?
Yeah, Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas has it.
Dream Downtown.
Go over to Dream Downtown in New York City or the Hyatt Regency at the
same time. Lindsay Lohan likes that hotel. I've stayed there.
Dream Downtown?
Yeah.
So, 26 languages. You can even do it now. Oh, on your Google Home device and your smart display.
So I can
now do this on my Google screen. What's it called? The Google Home Hub.
I've got it right here. So what do you do?
Say, "Hey Google, help me speak Spanish."
Hey Google, help me speak Spanish.
Okay, I'll be your interpreter. When you hear this knock, it means I'm listening. Let's get started.
So now you have to say something in Spanish, Jeff.
Where is the train station?
Oh, the other way around.
No, the other way. ¿Cómo te llamo?
Esta la estación de trenes.
Oh, good. And now you have to say something in Spanish to continue the conversation.
Buenos dias.
Good morning.
Oh, that's cool.
Here, let me see. I guess it can't hear me.
Tell me what to say. I'll say it.
Yo veo con mi ojito.
Me dice que decir LSH.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
That is. What was that? Give me it again.
So the phrase would be, hey, you know who, be my language interpreter or help me speak language. And you put the...
See if it knows German. Don't you speak German, Jeff?
Yeah, it knows German. Okay. You could do it.
Help me speak German. It's still trying to figure it out.
Because you said...
Oh, because I didn't stop it. Okay, Google, help me speak German.
Hey, learn German. German in 3 minutes.
No, I don't want that.
Say German interpreter.
Stop, Google.
Be my German interpreter.
Okay, stop. Stop. Okay, Google, be my German interpreter.
Okay, I'll be your interpreter. When you hear this sound, it means I'm listening. Let's get started.
Where is the train station? Das ist falsch.
That is wrong.
Give it a longer sentence.
Say something about Leicht schon sich recht.
Talk about your existential sentence.
Leider mein Deutsch ist sehr schlecht.
Unfortunately, my German is very bad.
Oh, that's good.
Seit Schule gibt es zu viele Jahre und habe ich zu viel vergessen.
I'm student for too many years, and I have forgotten too much.
Almost.
That's really good.
Sight.
That's good. That's good. That's really good. Google Assistant, you could say, be my Italian interpreter, help me speak Spanish, interpret
cool.
from Polish to Dutch. You can even just say simply Chinese interpreter or turn on interpreter mode.
No, I can't do it on my phone. I can only do it on the Assistant.
It looks like it's just Google Home speakers, some speakers with Google Assistant built in and all smart displays. So you could do it with your Lenovo or JBL.
They're just a rollout.
Maybe it's just a rollout. I love that. Yay.
That is really cool. See, that gets them some extra.
Yeah. I'm going to give them a pass now.
They can sin in the future and use that pass.
Absolutely. It's like three Hail Marys. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
AR Core 1.7 with new Augmented Faces API for the front-facing camera that can overlay effects on a user's face, even if your camera doesn't have a depth sensor. Pretty, pretty cool. You want to see it in action? Ooh, look at this. She's turning herself into a bronze person. Ooh. Wow. That's pretty cool.
That's a little creepy.
Yeah. Well, creepy is as creepy does. So, dinosaurs, chess. You saw the Childish Gambino ads they've been doing, right? They're actually pretty cool. You get Childish Gambino and you have dancing with you and stuff. It's really cool.
Ooh.
Hey, Google has some pretty good stuff, I got to admit, in there. So I'm going to give them a pass. And Google,
what does Facebook have to do to get a pass from you?
Facebook's never getting a pass from you.
This never getting a pass.
Hear the stories that
hey, you're not supposed to play. I'm using the Brave browser. Knock it off. Maybe I'm supposed to stop all auto.
You just used Google. Everything would be okay.
Google, no. Google is back on Apple Watch with the app Keep, which is nice. You can now take notes or read a shopping list, even more importantly, on your Apple Watch. If you use Google Keep. Google Keep is a very nice app, given that it's free.
I use Google Keep.
Yeah. So one of the things I love is a shopping list, because you can set it up that when I get, you know, when I go to the store, pop up my shopping list, and now it'll pop up in your Apple Watch, which you don't.
We're boring, Jeff.
Well, in that case, that's...
I slept,
the Google change log. All done.
Oh my gosh, you guys, someone in my house is cooking bacon.
Bacon. Oh. Bacon. Oh. I love bacon.
It's like that. You're like that cartoon right now where your nose just follows it and pulls you across the room.
Bacon.
Did you see This Person Does Not Exist?
I did.
What do you think?
This person, and networks are fun.
This Person Does Not Exist. Yeah. .com.
Oh, so, my God, the world's falling apart.
Here's the show. What is this doing? I mean, so what? Is this? I don't understand. It looks just like a guy I know.
Yeah, it's making up.
It's not a real person.
Faces.
It's making up.
It's people. Not a real person. It's making up people.
But it looks just like a guy I know.
Well, people's face features are actually, I mean, like, there's lots of people who look like a guy you know.
I don't
right?
know this guy.
No.
But I guess his name is Dieter.
He looks like the guy in the Trivago commercial. Yeah. Speaking of creepy. Yeah.
I think that haircut, definitely, his name is Dieter.
Oh, quick.
Oh, what the hell's going on with that comb over? Dude. That,
whoa.
But we can, oh, this is fun. We can make fun of him
because it's embarrassing.
We can make fun of him because he doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
Okay, let's do another one. So what is going on? Why am I getting this? And
have we? How long before this technology gets used for porn?
So this technology has been around a while. There's a woman named Janelle Shane. I'm trying to think of the name of her blog. She does all these hilarious things with these GAN networks. She's a research scientist.
What's wrong with this up here, though? There's some error there. Something going on with the hairline. And by the way, that kid needs braces. Oh, there's a multicultural child of all races and creeds and colors. And she's
over at AI Weirdness. So there's a blog post called GAN Cats, where it's GAN networks creating cats. That's hilarious. But she does a lot. So what we usually see in the media is good results of this. And this is good. But this type of network is usually or can be horrifying.
GAN stands for generative adversarial networks.
Yeah.
So they're working one against the other to come up with.
Till you get to something that looks right.
What's impressive is, at least on This Person Does Not Exist, is they're not doing any editing. They're just throwing it up there.
Right. But you're only seeing the good ones. And people are easy to do because we have so many images of them.
Oh, okay.
But start thinking about GANs for other things.
Yesterday, Steve Gibson was very upset.
Oh, dear.
That scares me.
He was
Don't
really,
scare me
he
like
was
that.
Scared. He was very scared over AI.org's technology that they would not release. AI.org. What is it? It's the Elon Musk funded...
Is this just Elon doing his?
Well, that's what
No. This is so I wrote about this a lot. It was created in 2015. It's Elon and others. They created this. Basically, the idea was to be able to open up more AI research to everyone. So it was both getting data sets. It was also understanding
problems.
But they
were very careful about saying safe AI, right?
I don't think they used the word safe at the time. They were looking at the ethics of what they were creating and how it could be used.
So they said they made a text generator.
Okay, this is like
too dangerous to release.
That's okay. Both the headline and that is like cherry picking the most scintillating bit from what would be a horrifyingly dull story otherwise.
But they don't want anybody to know how they do it, right? They haven't released. They released some of the data set. They've been reluctant to release more.
Sometimes they don't know how it's done. I mean, depending on the type of AI they're, depending on the neural network that you're programming, and maybe it's not even a neural network, you don't always know how the computer comes up with what it comes up with.
Right. Right.
Is a possibility.
Yeah.
I saw this story. I was like,
today, malicious actors, some of which are political in nature, this is from the article, have already begun to target a shared online commons using things like robotic tools, fake accounts, and dedicated teams to troll individuals with hateful commentary or smears that make them afraid to speak or difficult to be heard or believed. Their concern is that research into the generation of synthetic images, videos, audio, and text may further combine to unlock new, as yet unanticipated, capabilities for these actors. So due to concerns about large language models being used to generate deceptive, biased, or abusive language at scale, We're only releasing a much smaller version of GPT-2 along with sampling code. We're not releasing the data set, training code, or GPT-2 model weights. They're afraid they'll be misused.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not afraid. Should I give you a sample?
Well, I mean...
By the way, the data they used comes from Reddit outbound Reddit links. If a Reddit link had karma of 3 or greater, it was presumed, well, this must be a good site, which means the machine does particularly well. I'm not kidding. This is from the article. This is from their paper. Does particularly well on issues that involve Lord of the Rings, Brexit, or Hillary. Who is the singer one of these pop singers? Because of the Reddit connection, I think. Here's an example. I'll read you just a little bit. Steve read this yesterday. So the human wrote this prompt, which is a bizarre prompt, I might add. In a shocking finding, scientists Do you want to take that?
No. Didn't realize that was on.
that's a little passive aggressive, a little microaggression on my part. Stacy, would you like to take that call? In a shocking finding, by the way, this if it's human written, it's an ungrammatical human. In a shocking finding, scientists discovered a herd of unicorns living in a remote, previously unexplored valley in the Andes Mountains. Even more surprising to the researchers was the fact that the unicorns spoke perfect English. Then the machine, after 10 tries, I might add, wrote this. The scientist named the population after the distinctive horn Ovid's unicorn. These four-horned, silver-white unicorns were previously unknown to science. Now, after almost 2 centuries, the mystery of what sparked this odd phenomenon is finally solved. Wow.
Which is to say that the entire text of human life is just a cliche that you can copy.
Yes!
Right, that reads like my early papers. Yes. Journalism school, like my drop into journalism school was astonishing. I was like, oh yeah, 500 words, no problem.
No problem. Cliche after cliche.
I was like, oh, every word has to be a...
original?
A meaningful fact or mean something? What?
No. Yikes. That's hard. Although, we should point out that the Washington Post has had a robot writing its sports stories for several years now.
Yeah. AP and Reuters have been doing financial stories, weather stories, sports stories. It saves effort. Text is just a form of data visualization.
Good.
That's all.
Good.
That's
all. See? There's nothing to fear here.
I give it
move along,
a
human.
Pass. I give it a pass.
Jeff gives it a pass. Oh, this is a new feature. This is a new feature on the show. Pass or no pass?
Jeff gives it a pass. Jeff? I'm going to say we shouldn't implement this for a variety of reasons.
It's going to happen anyway.
I don't give you a pass for that. Higginbotham.
No pass.
No pass for you. No soup pass for you. Me.
Cliched, trite, unoriginal. No pass for you, Higginbotham. All right, there's a couple more quick stories, and then we'll get our picks, because I know I could feel Stacy craving the queso.
The bacon.
Bacon.
What is the bacon going to be on or in, Stacy? Do you know? Is this a surprise?
My guess, the bacon is allocated for a kale and sweet potato and egg dinner.
Oh, it needs bacon, definitely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cover the cost.
That's not good at all.
But with bacon, maybe. Breaking Google news from Axios. This just in from our chat room. Thank you, Hell's Kitchen NYC. Oh no, I don't have the link.
They're in the chat room.
Twitter.
Google's top policy executive is reorganizing the company's worldwide influence operation, according to an internal email obtained by Axios. I have no idea what that means.
They're going to lobby better in other places.
Google exec reorganizes policy shop as global threats.
Yeah, that's loom. A scoop from Axios right there.
Yeah, it sure is.
that is inside baseball.
It's a scoop. This just in.
A long rumored shakeup. Yes, I heard Stacy was whispering that rumor to me just the other day.
What is it? Tell me about, because I like Axios, or I thought I liked Axios, and now
like
everything is written in this new, TLDR executive.
Smart brevity, they call it.
They've like always done that. That has always been their thing.
So, this story is two sentences, But if I want to go deeper, I can get another 206 words. It's like, that's go deeper.
Yeah, it's smart brevity.
Smart brevity. That's the we do the opposite.
Smart. I don't know what it is.
We do dumb prolixity.
We do dumb long.
We are the headquarters of dumb prolixity.
And pedantry.
And pedantry. Okay, so that's just Axios's thing. I like Mike's briefing in the morning. It's a newsletter written in that fashion.
The tech one. Well, it's what's her name. It's our friend.
Oh, well, Freed is great.
One is also very good.
But I'll click the link because I want to read more, and it's the same. It's
not because you know everything you need to know. That's it.
Oh, is that it?
It's over.
I don't know.
You're not going to waste your time with background paragraphs.
I feel like there's more I need to know.
Quotes and all this junk. It's just going to tell you what you need, which I kind of like.
Really? You know more than I do. I feel like I need to know more. Uber's going to cap the New York City has capped the number of ride-hail cars and paused the issuances of licenses for 12 months. Uber sues, saying, hey, there should be as many Uber on the street as the market will bear. Well, you live in New York, Jeff. I've heard people in New York say the traffic is terrible because of Uber.
I watched the tourist come in town and tried to hail a taxi. And
it's impossible.
Oh, schlub. You can't do it.
Yeah. You got to know. You got to know what to do. You got to have the style.
And plus, I mean, it's still the case to this day. If you're African-American trying to hail a cab on the street.
Yep. There you go.
Racism lives in all kinds of ways. And so you call the Uber and you can get a ride. I think it's the market at work. Until they're all put out of work by self-driving Ubers, which will kill
people.
This
is always what Mike Elgin has said, that international travel has become so much better. You're in Mexico City, knowing that you can get an Uber is infinitely better.
And, you can't get one in Barcelona, though, right? Especially with...
Is it illegal there?
I believe they shut it down.
We used car services, I think, in Barcelona. I can't remember now.
Oh, car services.
It's like the days... So remember back in the day I had a phobia of phone booths in foreign countries. Oh my God, am I ever going to figure this out? The language would do with this or that. No, right now, you just take your phone and you call.
Yeah, you don't have to go to a phone booth. Right.
Life
is
easier.
I don't have to talk to an operator or nothing.
No. They're all unemployed. But
you cannot copyright the Carlton dance. One of the stars.
What about flossing?
No, can't. One of the stars of The Fresh Prince, Alfonso Ribeiro, was suing Fortnite, saying that dance I created on Fresh Prince in 1991, that's mine. The copyright office says that is not a choreographed routine. It's just some moves, which, by the way, you got from Springsteen and others. And so
something George Costanza would do.
Yeah.
So what is actually, Fortnite dance? Is being sued also by the kid, some kid who flossed.
Yeah.
That wasn't just me being random. Yeah. So I wonder if that's...
No, there's the multiple suits against Fortnite because those dance moves all come from somewhere, right? You want to see the Carlton?
Yes, everything comes from somewhere.
Yeah, this is Alfonso Ribeiro and the kind of, I think, the canonical demonstration of the Carlton. You need, by the way, a candle to really make this work. That's it, the Carlton dance. Now, am I going to get a YouTube takedown by Carlton or Fresh Prince? Or, by the way, NBC owns this. Not Carlton. But he used it when he performed in Dance with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars. So that's.
I was going to say, maybe the script just said dance and he created it.
Oh, I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
There's also the rapper 2 Milly, who does some sort of move that's in Fortnite. But I think this really is the copyright office saying,
enough.
Yeah, no. You can't copyright, a dance. You can copyright a choreographic routine, a ballet, but you can't copyright that.
A move.
A move. You can't copyright a move. Do you have anything that I missed before we get... wrap this up. I think we did everything.
I want to torture Stacy and keep her away from the bacon as long as we can. Well, I want to start. Let's start arguing about something now just to torture Stacy
Why don't y'all argue about something like Chromebooks or weird journalism standards I don't care about?
Wow. Okay, now that
Elon Musk meets PewDiePie. Now that's a bad thing.
Oh God.
I don't care about that story. I even saw that headline multiple times and ignored it. This is in PewDiePie's battle with the T-Series Bombay.
All right, there's two moguls considering things. Okay. Very quickly.
Yes.
Zuckerberg is considering putting the Facebook login on the blockchain.
What does that even mean?
Jonathan Zittrain. I don't know.
What does that even mean?
And then Jack Dorsey is considering a clarification feature, not an editing feature, but a clarification feature. We don't know what that means either.
Huh.
Maybe he'll clarify.
How about this? Paul Vixie, internet pioneer, blast Google for how Chromecast behaves on his home network. This is another Twitter, I'm sure, another Twitter outburst. Google, this is bogus as hell. Actually, it was on the IETF mailing list. Vixie, who is an internet Hall of Fame engineer, he created DNS, was upset about how Google uses DNS in its Chromecast Ultra. No way, Google. No way.
Got to get that data.
Hunger is doing things to her.
I can tell. I love this. This is the part of the show we look forward to all week long.
Well, now I'm hungry and I have to go to the bathroom.
Did we?
So at some point in time, I'm just going to be
like. Did we talk about Amazon pulling out of New York City last week? No, this is news.
No, we didn't. Oh, that's right. That is news.
They pulled out.
Because it happened Wednesday. Did it happen Wednesday or did it happen Thursday?
It did happen after we were off. Yeah.
It happened on Valentine's Day, Thursday. What do you think? Is that childish? They're taking their ball, as Mayor Blasio said, going home? Or
I think the fascinating thing in this is that the amazing AOC proved to be more popular than a mogul and a mayor and a governor.
I like it.
Go on, Jeff. I didn't realize you were done.
I was done. I was just correcting myself.
So
I clarified
I'm gonna bring
myself.
It to bring it over to Google, because if I look at this, I'm like, this is probably a good sign for, I guess, transparency. So being able to say, hey, this is how this deal went down. This is what we gave up. I think that's always important because, you know, we live in a democracy, theoretically.
They should have included stakeholders. I completely agree. Yeah.
So I think this is going to be interesting because if this becomes a big deal, Google has Sidewalk Labs in Toronto. And I've done an interview with someone on the show about this.
This is very controversial.
It's hugely controversial because Google hasn't been 100% clear in many people's opinions about how it's handling the data, privacy around it, and then also how it plans to make money. And it's starting to look more and more like a government giveaway. So I would say the next thing we should look at post Amazon picking up its toys and going home is what the heck happens with Sidewalk Labs, because that doesn't look as certain anymore.
Yeah. Well, even
that's my second day lead.
There's even unrest in Northern Virginia now in Arlington, and some Arlington City Council members said we didn't vote for that because that's Amazon HQ 2 Part 2 is in Northern Virginia.
I've been so pissed about corporate giveaways on tax revenue breaks and stuff for this for decades.
I do think that, and I like AOC, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in her tweets implied that by not having Google there, they would somehow magically get $3 billion to give to more needy.
No, but I think she didn't really say that. I don't think. I think what she was saying is we shouldn't have to give them a $3 billion break. And we should still get the jobs and they should be open with the community. And they weren't. So now a conservative front group has put up a billboard on Times Square complaining about AOC. And it's just a company that tries to fight for companies. And the more she does, the more she pisses off the right, the bigger they make her. I'm just amazed by her.
She does. I'm looking at subsequent tweets. She does understand that half a billion was capital grants. $2.5 billion was tax breaks. So she clearly understands.
Meanwhile, Google quietly went. I put this in somewhere in the run up. Google quietly went and used more normally made up companies to negotiate and get tax deals across the country. So, I mean, the idiocy here is that local, if local governments got together and had a meeting and said, let's all just stop this, they'd all have more money. But instead, there's a competition for that, and they fight each other down. It's just like the double Dutch sandwich with an Irish twist. If all the countries would agree to stop that stuff, they'd all have more money from these platforms. But
meanwhile, Amazon pays on its $11.2 billion in revenue in 2018. How much tax? Oh, nothing. That's legal, by the way. But
yeah, it is.
That, talk about tax grants. And I saw a graph, another thing that I, by the way, AOC tweets a lot. I'm still going through.
I know.
Wow, does she tweet. So I also saw a graph that shows job growth in New York City is through the roof. There isn't a lack of jobs in New York City.
No, and Amazon's still going to be here. And Google's getting jobs like crazy. They're buying up property like mad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Nope. Unless we have virtual bacon.
Oh, I wish. Bacon. Stacey has her pick of the week. Just in time for those of you moving out.
So I was going to do my house listing, but it's now under contract. So,
oh, congratulations. So, that was super fast.
It was. It took, we're not even actually on the market. So it took 3 days of.
So you got asking? Did you get over asking?
There was a little bidding war. It was very exciting, but it could all fall through. So we'll see.
Yes, it could. Well, knocking wood for you, Stacey. Knocking wood.
Thank you. So instead of my home listing, which was going to be it, I'm going to do my checklist. And I may have done this before, so I'm sorry if I have. But
No, you haven't. But hold on just a moment.
Oh, sorry.
I forgot the last ad.
Right.
We forgot advertising. money.
You can skip this if you want, but I wouldn't if I were you.
That was one heck of a tease.
And I have something. I have a couple of things I want to talk about for a change. But before I do that, I want to talk about do.co. I'm talking DigitalOcean, which is kind of the most amazing technology empowering developers and hobbyists like myself, big companies. DigitalOcean makes it really easy to set up a production server, production applications, with just a click of the mouse. In under a minute, you get a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can go from one virtual machine to 10,000. You can have standard or CPUs optimized. They call them droplets. And they're all based on enterprise-grade SSDs, and they're so fast that once you pick the application, or you can do Docker or Kubernetes or any of a number of operating systems, once you pick what you want that provisioning to be, it provisions it in 55 seconds or less. Get your Node.js app up. Get your WordPress instance. You can go on and on. It is really, really cool. And what this is, it really does, is it empowers people who have great ideas. Imagine, you know, if you were an inventor and you just had a machine, you'd push a button, it would spit out whatever it is you thought of. That's kind of what DigitalOcean is. Push button and you've got a server with 99.99% uptime, SLA. You got cloud firewalls, full DNS management, 12 global data centers, free round-the-clock tech support. Join over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, who rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. This really is one of those things that has made it revolutionary. It's so easy now to create a digital app, a website. It's incredible. Sign up today. You'll get a free $100 credit. That's going to go a long way at do.co/twit. do.co/twit. Get a brilliant idea. You want to build a minimum viable product, put it online. do.co/twit. I'm using it with portable web apps. There's so many things you can do with it. do.co/twit. Get a $100 credit right now. Now, Stacey, what were you talking about? A checklist of some kind?
Yes. This is a checklist for when you leave your smart home. It's an oldie goodie.
What? When you leaving a smart home, make sure you do these things.
Yeah. So this is a list of how you handle things when you're about to move.
Oh, this is clever.
So this is prior to occupancy or closing.
I don't know any of this stuff. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So this is.
And are you doing all this for the new owners?
Some of this, most of mine instead is, and it's a little bit longer, but yeah, I won't submit changes of ownership and contact information to device manufacturers. I'm just going to deauthorize my access.
Let them figure
which does
out.
Include, yeah. So you have to erase everything in your own account, right. And you're best off doing it also delinking everything from like Nest and your Amazon Echo accounts as well.
This has gotten much more complicated than it used to be moving. Used to have to turn off the power, the gas, the water, and say, see ya. Wow.
And some of this, like, I will not, you know, I have to bring, well, I actually have my own modem and I have my own router, so I don't have to worry about that. But, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah. You can get a copy of this at OT Alliance.
Yeah.
There's
it's
only
the Online Trust Alliance, and they did it with the National Association of Realtors.
OTAlliance.org/smarthome. What a good tip.
So you
congratulations.
Go.
You snuck that one in. You buried the lead. You sold your house already. Wow.
Well, I haven't sold it yet. It's under contract, Leo.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, I will stop. I'll knock wood again.
No. It's just, you know, they got to cross the T's and dot the I's. It's not a big deal.
Yeah,
don't
but it'll take,
her.
I mean.
Don't jinx her.
And you got somebody who is willing to say, okay, we won't take occupancy for a few months.
Well, I'll be moving, if this all goes according to plan, I'll be moving in the middle of April to another place in Austin. Till school finishes, yeah.
Oh, God. So you're going to move
twice.
A furnished
place?
We're probably going to do like an Airbnb or something like that.
Okay, got it.
You'll send everything in a container and then you'll just...
Yeah, we're going to do probably a container move.
Somebody's, yeah.
Good. Because it's really only like 6 weeks, so
that's good. I'm so happy for you.
Me too.
That's buying and selling is such a pain.
It's a big purchase.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis has a number for us.
So we can do the numbers here. So Axios, previously mentioned, has a very brief post because everything is Instagram as an engagement powerhouse using data from CrowdTangle, which is owned by Facebook. Top 10 accounts on three platforms by number of interactions. So the top account on Twitter, guess who? Hail to the Chief, 103.9 million interactions.
Yeah, but look how close Ariana Grande is and how far everybody else behind is.
Ariana Grande for president? I'm fine with that. I'm down with
that. She's huge. She's twice the next biggest one.
Four is AOC.
Doing really well. 36.9 million interactions. What is the period of that? A week?
Oh, I should know that. Well, there wasn't. I should have known that. I'm sorry.
Between November 17th and February 17th.
So a longer
actually,
period.
AOC is going to get probably higher, go up
huge,
higher.
Huge. Yeah. Huge. So then Facebook, Lad Bible is number one with a comparable 121 million versus Trump's 103
million.
What's
Lad Bible?
It's what it sounds like. It's a publication for.
It's Maxim on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Oh, it's for boys.
So well, more than you, but more than that. More.
Men who still act like boys.
It's for people who read the articles.
Well, it's not just porn. It's soft porn, or it's hot women, muscle tips, and
it's shallow males.
And then what's Sifras, the number two?
No.
By the way, Lad Bible has more engagement on Facebook than the president has on Twitter, which is interesting. On Instagram, these numbers dwarf the other two platforms.
That's the point we get to.
Holy cow.
So nine gags.
What are we looking at? We're looking at a Brazilian search result. Okay, get back to this.
Has 812 million interactions.
What's nine gags?
I don't know.
I'm not on any of these three platforms. I can't look them up.
It's a Reddit-ish.
Reddit-ish.
Thing.
Go fund the world. That sounds bad. Kylie, 433. Then Ariana Grande. NBA, Cristiano Ronaldo. NFL, The Rock. Mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian finally showing up in ninth place.
Oh, Kylie's on there.
Oh, that's who Kylie is?
Oh, you don't even Kylie have to do a last sister, name, just Kylie. Kylie Jenner. Oh, for crying out loud. What's the deal with her? Is lip plumping that important? Oh, I know who she is.
She's
but
the younger sister. She's the cool Kardashian. She's the Gen Z Kardashian.
All this does is make me sad for humanity, frankly.
Oh, Nat Geo's on there?
That's true. I don't know who a lot of these people are. I don't know.
Kamala Harris is number 10 on Twitter already.
Interesting. Do you think that that's in and Ye? Is Ye Kanye?
Yes.
Okay. Pretty soon it'll just be Y.
It's a good thing we have Stacey on the show so she can tell us all these things.
Do you think, though, that that is a indicator of, like, genuine... I think Twitter not. Twitter's kind of its own...
Well, so it was interesting. I think Axios did another look at the candidates. And Kamala Harris, and full disclosure, as I have a Kamala hat, was number one, except on Facebook, where Bernie was number one. This is before he announced. And Bernie, I did a story, a post in 2016 about Occupy Democrats, and they got 100 to 300 million impressions a week from Facebook memes, and they kind of made Bernie, and Bernie stayed very strong in that meme world of Facebook ever since.
Wow.
Not on Twitter, not on Instagram, but on Facebook. And that's how he got to raise $6 million in a day.
My pick of the week is kind of disappointing, frankly. The FDA says buying young people's blood won't keep you from aging.
Can I get a refund?
Apparently, this is the thing.
Oh, yeah.
People are looking for
Silicon Valley, I think.
Peter Thiel did it. That's why it's like a quote-unquote tech story.
Oh.
Because we're so bright here.
Actually, this is really Karsten's pick. I knew nothing about it, but I had to mention it. My pick is something actually I don't know anything about, but I want to ask you about, Jeff, which is a new site called Credder, CREDDER.co. And the idea is to rate news sources on credibility. And I think that's kind of an...
Well, it's a new one.
Yeah, I just want you to take a look at it. The reason it comes up, it's a guy in Petaluma has set it up, and I know his dad, and he contacted me, and I think it's a very interesting idea. I don't know how they rate the credibility, but...
Yeah, that's the key.
That's, of course, the key.
Is there an about? Yes, there is.
Yeah, which is blank.
Oh, geez.
So maybe it's so new that...
404.
Yeah, 404. But top outlets, they have a leaderboard on outlets, and that's interesting. I just thought this would be an interesting thing for you.
I'll dig into it. Introduce me if you want.
I shall. He also does the podcast now I forgot the name of it. It's the one where they uncovered the stories that are undercovered. Each year they do that list of stories that were missed. So I think he's kind of in this space. Anyway, and then finally I want to mention somebody none of you care one whit about, but I'm kind of sad about this. This week, one of the legends of voiceover passed away, Ken Nordine, at the age of 98. I bet you don't know his name, do you? He's very famous for word jazz. In fact, you could find, fortunately, a lot of his stuff. He sold these as records, but you could find a lot of his stuff on...
Wouldn't you know?
He's got an amazing voice.
Wouldn't you know?
On YouTube, if you look for Ken Nordine. 98 years old.
And so begins this tale of woe.
Oh, my.
He's got an amazing voice, but more than that...
He's like Tom Waits meets Christopher Walken.
Yeah, he was a beatnik, and he was reading poetry in a jazz club in the mid-60s, and they ran out of poetry, and they said... And he just started riffing and invented something called word jazz.
And so he searched both far and wide.
It's like that AI algorithm.
This is like something I would make up as a thing that isn't really a thing, but happens to be a thing. White.
I think he did a little bit of LSD. I'm just guessing.
Do you take this? I do.
But I love his voice, and he's legendary in the business. So we're sorry to lose him, but Ken Nordine passed away last week at a ripe old age, I might add, of 98. But if it's any, it's just an excuse to get people to look for his stuff and find it. Ken Nordine, N-O-R-D-I-N-E, a Chicagoan through and through. All right, I think we're done. Go get some
bacon.
Food. Go get some bacon and kale.
Bacon,
kale, sweet potatoes, and marshmallows. Sounds fantastic. Fantastic.
Egg. No marshmallows.
Egg. All right. And I thank you for being here, Stacey Higginbotham. She is the awesomest at StaceyOnIoT.com, at GigaStacey on the Twitter. Subscribe to her newsletter, listen to her podcast with Kevin Toefel, and see her right back here next week. Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks, Sean. Bye.
Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism. Actually, he's the director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark School, Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY. He also is a regular on this show, and you can read his thoughts at buzzmachine.com and follow him on the Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
And I thank you all for being here. We do this week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. If you want to watch live, twit.tv/live. You can listen live as well. You can also get on-demand versions at our website, twit.tv/twig, or, of course, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. Last chance to do our Twit survey. If you haven't done that, I know most of you have. It's our once-a-year attempt to get to know you better. Not you personally, but in aggregate, get to know our audience better. Because we don't ever collect personal information. If you want to take the survey, let us know what you like, don't like, what you'd like to see more of.
You get plenty of personal information out of me on every show.
I know. But I'm not writing it down, Jeff, and I have no memory, so you're okay. twit.to/survey19. You want to hear some credit card blues? Here's some credit card blues. You have to pop me up.
Whatever it is. How the whole thing shakes out, as they say.
What a voice.
What you really care about.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.
What it means to you.